Blog Talk Radio.
Finally, we've waited 8 months for the NFL to return. The NFL is back. I hope you're excited as we are. Sorry we haven't seen you guys in a couple of weeks. You know, we pride ourselves that if we're going to do a show, we want it to be worth you tuning in. We're not just going to do a show just because we can. We know that the NFL is the most popular sport in this country. We know that everybody is fiending for NFL coverage, NFL news. So you guys aren't just listening to the Madden voice, although I don't know why you'd go anywhere else. We know you're on ESPN. We know you're on, you know, NFL Network, on the internet, you know, other shows. So we want to make sure that when you tune into the Madden voice, hosted by me, Commissioner T, a couple other people I'll introduce momentarily, that you're getting unique perspectives on some of the big stories, as only we can do, kind of like you, from a fan's perspective. We're not sports writers. We're not NFL players, former NFL players. We're not former coaches, you know, or general managers or any of that stuff. We're just fans that follow the game closely, loyally, like all of you do. And we have a little bit of a unique take on it. So we appreciate you being here. And remember, if you want to tune into the Madden voice, just go to MaddenVoice.com. All the information will be right there. You can check us out on Facebook. Just Facebook / The Madden Voice. You can go to Twitter and just, you know, look up The Madden Voice and you'll see us right there. But we will be here from this point on every week. Time may change, but it'll be every Tuesday night. If you want to call in, it's 347-838-9525. 347-838-9525. But without any further ado, I don't do it alone. I've got two incredible co-hosts. This first guy was EAFL, the best Madden online league ever created. There'll never be another like it. It's retired. It's off the pasture. But you know what? There'll never be another like it. And yeah, you know, Madden came out last week, so we might ask K-Star what's the scuttlebutt about the new Madden 25 video game. But that's how we all started. And many years ago, we had our first Super Bowl, and who thought that it would turn into what it's turned into? But this man was the winner of that very first Super Bowl. He is also an avid Chicago Bears fan, living out on the West Coast now. He done abandon us, you know, out here in this end of the country. Done went on out there to West Coast, the sun, the beach, and the girls, and the sun, and all that great weather. But I ain't mad at him. Dr. Train, welcome to the Madden Voice.
What up, T? Oh, man, happy to be back. Happy to be talking about some real NFL news. Yeah.
Yeah.
Forget my voice. I left part of it in Cabo.
Yeah, man, I ain't even going to talk about that, man. I don't even want to talk about it. You know what I'm saying? You know, the guy's a PhD, got this great job out there on the West Coast, making all this big bank. Next thing you know, oh, yeah, fellas, I'm about to take a little trip, but I'll catch y'all when I get back, you know. You know, I'm like, I ain't mad at you, but damn. No, I'm sitting over here on my back porch drinking coffee. You taking trips all over the world, but that's all right, man. That's all right. Good to have you back, man. Good to have you here with us. Let's bring in our other co-hosts. This guy annually is one of the best Madden players to play the game. One day, me, you know, when you look at Madden a player's Hall of Fame, when you talk the short list of who could be considered the top players ever, when you talk about the problems and you talk about the dynasties and some of these guys that have had longevity in the game at a high level, this guy might be someone you consider. He's walked the red carpet. He's been on Madden Nation Season 4. Avid Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And I got to pick his brain about James Harrison because I'm confused about this guy. But we'll get to that in a little bit. But good to have him. And it is my nemesis, my adversary, but he's still my brother from another mother. K-Star, welcome to the Madden Voice.
What's going on? I had a little prolonged introduction you just gave me. It's real sweet, real cute. But let me tell you, there's no might about it. I'm one of the greatest of all time. So let's work on that introduction a little bit.
Well, you know, this is the first show of the NFL season, so I had to give y'all guys a little extra muster, you know, and for those of y'all who don't know who I am, because I never really introduced myself other than Commissioner T, but that is who I am, Commissioner T, reside in Bristol, Connecticut, huge Dallas Cowboy fans. Coincidentally, I reside in the same town as and grew up in this town of Bristol, Connecticut, where ESPN is called home since 1979. I live a very short, maybe at most 10-minute drive. I see them all the time, run into some of their people that live locally. And, you know, maybe one day me and ESPN will have a better relationship. But right now I'm here with the Madden Voice because that's what I do. And, yes, this is also the home of Aaron Hernandez. I ain't running from it. I ain't hiding from it. It is what it is. I don't really think we're going to talk about that tonight, but there will be some Aaron Hernandez discussions throughout the season. And anybody want to call in and talk about it, that's fine. I'm sure we'll bring back his cousin, Randy Garcia, who was on a few weeks ago, gave us a great interview from a family perspective. And Randy and I have kept in touch, and he's willing to come back on and talk to us some more. So we'll keep that brewing. But nevertheless, let's get it on. Let's get right into some NFL talk. Let's talk about the Eagles for a second, and let's talk about Michael Vick being named the starter. And I remember Train had brought up, the question of whether Vick would be that starter, and K-Star and I felt that he should be, and he is. And I want to get Train's perspective on that. Do you think they made the right choice over there in Philadelphia?
Okay, just a quick correction. Actually, that was K-Star's question, and I was just arguing the fact that he could be challenged. But, of course, they made the right choice.
Oh, well, okay. It was I thought you were K-Star and I was on the same page, and I thought you were a little hesitant on naming him to start.
The question was, should he be in competition for the – something to the effect of –
It was. If it is a legitimate competition or not, or if it's more so just motivation for Michael Vick, if it was basically legitimate, which I didn't think it was, and I don't really think, again, that it was, especially the way it played out.
Man, I have no doubt they made the right decision. I expected no one other than Michael Vick to be the starter. Really, I mean, Nick Foles is, I mean, in order for Nick Foles to take over, you would have to show something that really sets you above Mike Vick, and he doesn't have enough experience, let alone talent, to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know that it was ever a real competition, to be honest with you. You know, when you're looking, I think that, you know, and I had said this before when we talked about it, I think that in some respects, you know, Michael Vick is the forgotten mobile quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, before there was Russell Wilson, before there was Kaepernick, before there was RG3, you know, there was Michael Vick. And you know, K-Star will tell you, arguably the most dangerous Madden athlete of all time. I personally think he was, but some people would argue that. But I think, you know, on the sticks, if you knew how to use Michael Vick, you weren't losing. It's just as simple as that, period. And you know, so before all these guys came in and the read option and Tim Tebow and all of that, there was Michael Vick. Now, the guy went to jail for a little while and was, you know, and came back. But I think he's still got some tread left on that tire. And now you're bringing in a quarterback that is known for a very upbeat style of play with a mobile quarterback. He's known for that. So, I mean, you know, and when they signed him to another year contract, which I think was smart. Let's give it a year. No long-term contract here. Let's just give him a year and see how it works, and it'll give us time to see who else is out there and what else is going on. I think at that point in time, unless Vic really regressed or got injured, it was his job to lose. And so I think the Eagles made a good choice. And let me just say this. I don't want to take away. I know K-Star is probably going to touch on this a little bit. But, for people to really put the Eagles already at the bottom of the NFC East, man, slow your roll for a second. I just don't understand. Oh, my God. I mean, I'll give you the floor in a second, but it was just as dangerous when Vince Young was the backup over there saying, Dream Team. We didn't like that, right? So now everyone over there is quiet. Ain't nothing happening. They just going about business, installing their offense, whatever, And now all of a sudden they think that this is going to be the worst team in the NFC East. I got to be careful. Remember, the NFC East, man. I mean, the last couple of years, the winning team has been 9-7. So at 9-7, anybody can take that division. I think they got to slow their roll for a minute. Go ahead, K-Star.
No, I 100% agree. I mean, it's kind of something we'll touch on later. But, yeah, the Eagles are definitely a dangerous team. And I think it's not really a good assessment to sit here and say that since last year they struggled, that they're going to struggle this year. This is a whole different coaching staff, different sort of circumstances. I mean, and the fact of the matter is it's a whole new, brand-new offense in the NFL that it probably hasn't seen before. I mean, we really don't know. We can't really – project the Eagles as last in the division or first in the division, because we really don't know. No one can really speculate to a fair degree because, I mean, there's so much unknown in how that utility offense is going to play, how it's going to look, injuries, like how they're going to play out. It's probably unknown. I mean, predicting the NFC East is like predicting, I mean, who's going to win the lottery anyway. It's really tough. Like you said, 9-7 can win the division, so how are you going to sit here and tell me that one team doesn't have a chance while the other three absolutely do? It's a four-team race. That's what makes NFC East the NFC East. They don't, go to 9-7 because they're bad teams. They go to 9-7 because they beat up on one another. That's what they do. That's why they're very entertaining to watch. And real quick, yes, Michael Vick, greatest football player, character, because they call him a character, but he was such a freak, 2004 especially. You could, with Michael Vick, you could work all kinds of magic on the sticks, and that guy was unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. I was victimized by him many a time.
Yeah.
Many a time. You actually be searching for guys that you could put on defense with 99 speed to hope that you can stop them because, I mean, it was just insane. Yeah, I'm going to take my running back and put him back at cornerback so I can catch Michael Vick because it's some bull, yeah.
Well, I had Brian Urlacher. Oh, I didn't need anyone else.
Okay. I'm talking outside the EAFL. You didn't play some people I played. Train, no disrespect intended.
Yeah, it's
Train.
I mean,
we had some tough. We had some tough comp.
Good, but there was some crazy Michael Vick stick. Let's not cast off ignorance. No, Michael Vick.
No, I didn't say everybody, but I did see my share fair of big users.
Yeah, it was insane. It was insane. But Let's go to Train's division for a second. I want to get your thoughts on Vince Young. Vince Young, who I thought, frankly, was a shoo-in, played well from what I could tell, and next thing you know, he's cut, released by the Packers. Train, that's, I don't know how close you've been following it because I know that's not your favorite team over there, but I know you keep an eye on your rivals. And, any thoughts on Vince Young being released?
I'll have to say I'm about as surprised as you are, because from what I saw, it seemed like Rodgers and Vince Young were like the only two remaining quarterbacks on the roster from the last cut. And I know they had brought somebody in, but, who they brought in hadn't been with them all training camp. So I figured, it was definitely going to be Michael Vick's new home. So it's surprising, which will lead into Dr. Train's philosophy later about the unexpected.
Sure.
And, it kind of sucks. Not to say he really would have gotten a chance to play, but I really thought dude had a home. Now, I did think it was a strange fit, considering the type of quarterback that Rodgers is. But even Aaron Rodgers underestimated for his ability to move in the pocket and for his ability to scramble. So I don't know. Maybe they saw something in a rookie that they didn't see in Vince Young. But I definitely considered it a strange cut, considering that all the other quarterbacks that had been in camp before Vic had gotten cut. And you didn't bring anyone in until right around preseason week 3. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I vaguely remember hearing they just signed somebody. I don't know if either one of you guys heard this, but they just brought in somebody to Green Bay since Vic was cut. But I the name escapes me. But I know they brought in somebody off the street. And I'm looking real quick to see if I see it on their website real quick. But I don't, because I'm not used to their website. Seneca Wallace, that's who it is.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes, I did hear that. So, yeah, thank you. I did. It slipped my mind. I'm getting old, man. I tell you, man, when they say that your memory really, I'm telling you, I'll be thinking things, and I'll be walking around, and I'll hear something, and I'll be like, oh, that's good for the show. And then but I'll go to write it down somewhere, and by the time I get there, I'm like, what did I just hear? Because I don't remember this. Man, yo,
well,
yeah.
I'm here to clean it up, like when you're feeling. I'm here to, you know, put us back into play to get the ship going, like to steer us in the right direction. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah, you're there, but you still won't host the show, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Bulletin started.
I don't know. Already. You know, be here. Train is hosted.
Temporary trump card.
You know, well, it ain't got to be temporary. All you got to do is step up and say, okay, bang, I'm going to host.
Oh, no, that's why it's temporary, because I'm going to host the show. So that's why it is the temporary trump card.
Yeah. As we hear crickets. Tumbleweeds, because it's the I am. You know, I feel like I'm talking to my daughter. And like, when are you going to do your homework? Dad, I'm going to do my homework. But you're not doing it. But I'm going to do my homework. Okay. well, I mean, I Seneca Wallace was, wasn't he, was it Seattle that he played for?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, probably a little bit of younger version of Vince Young, but I don't know that he's ever done anything even remotely close to what Vince Young has done in the league, so... I mean, for whatever their reason. And I did hear the general manager there, Thompson, I believe his name is, release a statement that he kind of blamed himself for Vince Young's release and felt that they threw a lot at him, in which they had signed him earlier in training camp, so he had more time to learn, and they felt like he was just too far behind the curve to catch up, and that's why they released him, and he took the blame. But, you know, if you're Vince Young, what's that doing for you? I mean, is that a message to other NFL teams to give him a chance? Because I don't know that they're hearing it that way. That's not helping me. You released me, you know? So I don't know. I don't know that that's helping him. It's amazing when I look at the quarterbacks, and we're, you know, Brady Quinn just got signed. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you look at Vince Young, who was a champion. We look at Leinart, who played, I believe he played against Vince Young in that game. We look at Tim Tebow. You know, we're looking at like, you know, national champions and Heisman Trophy winners here, and these guys are without jobs. I mean, I don't know. K-Star, do you have any thoughts on, you know, he wasn't there long, but any thoughts on the Leinart release by the Bills? Matt Leinart, who doesn't seem to be able to catch on anywhere either.
The NFL is a cold world. I mean, it's tough. That's a tough place to, I mean, make a legitimate, you know, living off of, because there's so much competition. I mean, you can dominate, and we've seen it so often in the college level, but guys just not making it in the pros, whether it's Tebow, whether it's Matt Leinart. I believe Jimmy Clausen was just released, a former Notre Dame quarterback who had some pedigree at the time when he was drafted. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's... Hey, even Brady Quinn, I believe him too. He's a first round pick from Notre Dame. I mean, it's tough. You know, it just is kind of what it is. A lot of players don't translate to the NFL. Even like Matt Leinart, who at one point was supposed to be a sure thing, And again, you're right. Vince Young, Matt Leinart played against each other in the national championship game. I mean, even Reggie Bush was there, and it took him a while to kind of, you know, put his stamp in the NFL. It's tough. It's just a different game, different speed.
Either that or scouts and GMs need to be a better judge of talent to determine when it is okay to finally put this quarterback on the big stage and when is a good time to draft this quarterback, because some of these guys have been, it seems like to me, every year as soon as the draft rolls around, as soon as the draft is over and they're looking at the draft the next year, the first thing they're looking at is what's the next best quarterback coming out. Every first pick doesn't need to be a quarterback that's supposed to save your team. You need to pick an impact player that's going to help bring your team to the forefront. But they're always looking for the next best quarterback. And for a lot of drafts, it's not there. It's rare to get drafts like we got the year before with Luck, RG3, and Wilson. And also the same draft that brought out Rivers, Big Ben, and Eli. It's very rare to get drafts like that where you have a good crop of quarterbacks. And mind you, that's only three mentioned.
Yeah.
Of each one. Well, and the last one, you know, you had Tannehill and you had Whedon, and yet we're still waiting to see what all of them like in their second year.
Pressure on them. They can't even develop because the fever of the NFL is the quarterback. You have to win now, and that's why these teams who don't do well, who are typically drafted in the first top 10 picks, typically have a really bad quarterback play. So they're looking for that next guy, that some of those guys aren't built to be that. They need more support. They're not always the star, you know, more role-playing type quarterbacks.
I just don't think you necessarily need a star quarterback, though.
Well, I don't know, Train. I mean, first of all, you don't know. No one knew Russell Wilson was going to turn into what he's turned into. No one knew Kaepernick was going to – I mean, he took Alex Smith's job. Alex Smith had a 108 QB quarterback rating and got replaced by Kaepernick. You know, RG3 and Luck were, you know, 1 and 2 respectively. So, you know, there was you know, sound money that these guys were going to be the real deal. But beyond that, it was a gamble. And so, you know, when you look at teams that have had dominant play – it usually, 9 times out of 10, I mean, I don't know that I can think of an exception. Maybe your team went to the Super Bowl with Grossman, right? Didn't Rex Grossman take you
to the Super Bowl with Grossman? Went to the NFC Championship with Cutler.
Right.
He's still around average quarterbacks as of right now.
You know, but he didn't win. You know, I mean, and I'm not trying to rub it in your face, but what I'm saying is, you know, where did Grossman go 2 years later? I mean, you know, he got there because of your defense. You know, let's keep it real. He was a game manager that could make a play every now and then, but he was not a game changer. And when you look at the teams that are there, you look at the dominant teams of our time, we're talking the Patriots, right? We're talking, now we could say, the Packers. But even before Aaron Rodgers, it was Brett Favre. We're talking, you know, the Saints now. You know, we're talking Peyton Manning with the Colts, and now he's reborn again with Denver. You know, we're talking Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger, 2 Super Bowls. Giants with Eli Manning, 2 Super Bowls.
With Matt Ryan always at the end of the draft, man.
We could argue that Eli also had a strong defense, but he's got 2 rings. So.
Eli also had a strong defense. Big Ben had an offense with a run game and a strong defense. Tom Brady, not taking anything from him. He's dead. Tom Brady, after their championships, he's definitely kept them in the hunt. That I do agree with you. But to take it all, they had a strong defense to take it all.
Yeah, well,
so
there's more than just having that
quarterback. That's going to keep you in contention. You need other parts. And
the Ravens have had some of the best defenses of all time, and just finally figured out how to win a Super Bowl because Flacco finally figured out how to play. He finally got out of his own way.
He stepped it up. But what I'm trying to say is it goes hand in hand. And my main point now, because I'm not really disagreeing with what you're saying, but my main point is that. Right now, guys are reaching for their quarterback, and it's not there, and that's why you're seeing these guys fall to the wayside because
they're not NFL ready to, you know, they're not NFL ready. They're getting thrown in, either they're getting thrown in too early and not getting the time to develop, or they're just not NFL material.
Well, they're getting, I mean, these guys, you know, if we looked at Tebow, I mean, we could debate the Tebow thing, but the Pats let him go, so I don't know. Vince Young has had some opportunities. Leonard has had some opportunities.
Vince Young has been, his own character got him out of there.
Absolutely.
Vince Young should have had a way better.
He didn't play very well in Philly either, though.
He didn't, but by that time it was like, you know, there was something missing there by the time he got to Philly.
I think
he really could have made his home in Tennessee. Bud Adams, or if they were on the same page, I think he could have made his home in Tennessee.
Jeff Fisher, but I agree there, but he wasn't mature enough to do that. But when he went to Philly, he had another chance. You know, and they are, you know, Vic gets arrested, he gets released from Atlanta, he comes back humble, gets a chance in Philly, and now he's still their starter. So, I mean, you know, and he's older than Vic. You know, I mean, he's older than Vince Young. So what I'm saying is he had an opportunity last year and he didn't capitalize on it. And I think, frankly, some of it is just he just isn't playing as good. I mean, he didn't play bad this offseason. You know, the preseason with Green Bay, but last year he just didn't play that well. You know, and that's the remedy. You know, you've had character issues, you've had off the field issues, you've had, you know, press issues, immature issues. You go out there and light it up. Somehow or another, they start forgetting about that. Somehow or another, that gets put to the back burner, and they start defending you. And you know, because guys out here winning and playing well, and unfortunately, you know, Leonard ain't done nothing. You know what I mean? Brady Quinn just got signed, but what has he done? This was a guy that came in highly recruited, you know. So I think I don't disagree with what you're saying, Train. But on the other side of it, I don't blame these teams because as a Cowboy fan, pre-Romo, we went through baseball players like Drew Henson and Chad Hutchinson coming in playing quarterback. Quincy Carter and, you know, then getting old guys like Drew Bledsoe and Vinny Verdi. You know, on their last leg coming in, you know. So we went through a number of years with substandard quarterback play. And, you know, that's why I for the most part, defend Tony Romo because I know what it's like when you don't have a franchise quarterback. So I don't blame some of these teams, you know, out there looking for, you know, the next big quarterback and hoping that maybe they can find the next Russell Wilson or the next, you know, Kaepernick under the radar. Or heck, Tony Romo came in undrafted from Eastern Illinois and, you know, now, you know, considered, you know, definitely a top 10 NFL quarterback, if not higher. So they're looking for that next diamond in the rough. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. I don't see the way the game is today. If you don't have a quarterback that can produce, you ain't going anywhere. Yeah, the game is quarterback focused today, if you ask me. And we saw it last year. All the teams with quarterbacks that produced went to the playoffs. You know, Flacco finally got out of his way, brought home a Super Bowl. So I don't blame him.
I mean, it definitely is more quarterback focused, but, you know, let's not anoint. I mean, as soon as the draft is over, let's not anoint and look for anoint these dudes that we've never even heard of barely in college, and all of a sudden they deserve to be the top pick coming out of the draft. It's a crime to them because I promise you. I mean, look at Geno Smith, who has shown you nothing during the preseason. And he's upset that he wasn't a first-round pick. Shouldn't even been a second-round pick.
Yeah, he has not played well. I don't know how much that, frankly, I'm going to blame on him because I think he's in a dysfunctional franchise. I'm serious.
Let's see what he does in the regular season. Let's not hold the preseason against him, for God's sake. I mean,
let's realize that this is a team who they give him the start in the dress rehearsal. He doesn't play well. 3 interceptions, runs out of bounds, you know, in his own end zone. And it's the fourth quarter, and they bring in their last year's starter in the fourth quarter where everyone should be resting now because even in a dress rehearsal, you're not playing 4 quarters. At most, it's 3. Most teams, it's probably a half. Could go into 3 if you're still looking for something. But, you know, by the fourth quarter, it's all scrubs. And they bring in Sanchez? The team is dysfunctional. Rex Ryan is dysfunctional. He's a great defensive mind, but he doesn't get it. And now what happens? Sanchez is out, shoulder hurts, and it looks like Geno Smith is going to get the start, although he didn't earn it. I will agree with that, although I would have given him the start anyway, because I know I can work on him and have the potential of getting more. I already know what I'm going to get out of Mark Sanchez, and that ain't enough. So why continue that experiment? Let him be the backup. Hold the clipboard. Give your Smith four games. See what he does. Give him four, you know. And now you don't got no choice because Sanchez is out because you made a stupid decision. And then you go and bring in Brady Quinn, who, I mean, I don't know, guys. Am I missing something? Has the guy done anything in the NFL? He had a stint in Cleveland. And, I mean, has he done anything in the NFL?
Nothing that makes me want to watch him play.
And that's who you sign? I don't know. I have some friends that are Jets fans, and I just have to say, I mean, I'm not trying to do what I said you shouldn't be doing, which is predicting what's going to happen in the division, but I'm not optimistic about that team based on everything we're seeing. I think that team's in big, big disarray. And I'll tell you, unless they come out and start winning some games, Rex Ryan may not make it through the season because it's more of the same crap from last year, if you ask me. Just ridiculous.
Last 2 years, they've just been dysfunctional. I feel like for like the last 3 years, they've been just ever since that second AFC title game. It's every single offseason, there's drama surrounding the Jets and the dysfunction and the chaotic locker room. This core they have, it's just volatile. Like, I don't even understand how he's still there.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Jesus, with the Jets. Okay.
K-Star, you are on spotlight. Your boy, your man, the guy that you touted and claimed all types of positive things for at one point, has been released by the Patriots. Does he have a future in the NFL? It's your boy now.
First of all, at one point he was. And then he did something just blasphemous to my team. But, you know, I think this might have been the end of Tim Tebow in the NFL. And it's because he just wants to play quarterback and teams don't see him fit as a quarterback. It seems, I would assume that Patriots kind of gave him his last shot. He didn't make the roster as a third-string quarterback. He couldn't, you know, beat out Mark Sanchez, the incompetent, the terrible, the dreadful, the 90-plus turnovers in five seasons, Mark Sanchez, even late in the season when the guy was getting hit with butt fumbles, he couldn't even beat him out. And I just think, unfortunately for him, since he only wants to play quarterback, he probably did see the last of Tim Tebow in the NFL, which, again, right or wrong, I mean, the media history that he carries around him also is a con for him when he joins the NFL locker room because teams really don't want to deal with that. So I think because of, you know, the hype, the chances that really haven't been seized and the bad practice play and everything else, that he probably has run his course in the NFL at least as a quarterback until he renounces that and, you know, tucks his tail between his legs and plays a different position.
You know, you sit there all sad about it, but it's your fault, man. I mean, I don't know why you're sitting over there all sad. I blame you. Because your team, your Steelers, and I'm not going to play the clip. Okay, I'm not going to play the clip. But your Steelers made him look better than he ever could look by giving up that touchdown in the playoffs. And it's your fault. It's your fault. Y'all ought to sign him to back up Ben. He's agile. You know what I'm saying? Big, agile quarterback. What, you wouldn't take him on the Steelers?
I mean, I have nothing against it. If he was a backup to Ben, that's fine. No, that's fine. I mean, I don't care. We have an established franchise quarterback. I would have no problem with that. It's not like I have anything against the man. I mean, like, well, not entirely true. But it's not like as a player, I have ill will cast in his way. I mean, he still has, I believe, and has shown, because it's not like my Steelers just propped him up and gave him the game. The guy played his ass off that game. He was making all kinds of throws that he couldn't make. I mean, the Steelers play man-to-man, cover one, cover zeros, because that was the blueprint on him. He can't beat man-to-man coverage. He can't throw those windows. He can't make those tight spiral throws, and he sure enough did. So let's not act like he just didn't, you know, the Steelers just laid down. He made those plays.
Train, any thoughts on the Tim Tebow experiment in New England and his future?
Nope. That's exactly how I feel about this situation. Nope. Look, I stand right next to Stephen A. when I say this. Unless Tebow is doing something productive in football, I don't want to talk about him. Because that's my only reference to Tim Tebow is football. And he cannot play the quarterback position. So let's stop hoping that he'll one day get it. It's not happening. He's had several chances, even after Denver. And in every camp, everyone says the same thing. This guy cannot throw. And when he's in the preseason games, you see the same thing. This guy cannot throw. So unless you're willing to run the Wildcat all day, every day, I don't want to talk about Tim Tebow.
Well, let me say this. I don't think his career is done. Whether he's got to go up to Canada, Arena League, Pee Wee football, or start playing Madden and playing in K-Stars tournaments, I don't think his career is done. I think this guy is too much. The reason we're talking about him is because it makes news, because he is news. And somebody out there is going to say it's going to be worth the veteran minimum to sign this guy and have him sit number three on our depth charts and to fill more seats and to get more ESPN and NFL Network coverage because he's on our roster. We're going to make that money back and then some. Some team is going to figure that out. He is a media draw for whatever the reason. Thus, he's on our agenda. Thus, you turn on First Take. You turn on NFL Network. You turn on anything. And he was, you know, from the time he was signed with the Patriots, it was news. And watching him and wondering, and right when the roster cut deadline happened, will he make it? Will he not? Bob Kraft interviewed recently said that he wanted Tebow to make the team. You know, he's saying nothing but positive things about him. And, and they haven't even ruled out the fact that maybe if things happen a certain way that he left on good terms. And, you know, between the Patriots and the Raiders, you never know what the future brings with some players that can't find homes. But I think because the NFL is a business, yeah, if the first thing you want is people that are going to produce. But if you can get a guy on your roster that's going to fill some seats and it's going to generate some income for you, I'm telling you. Remember I said it, September 3rd, 7:37 Eastern Standard Time, Commissioner T predicts that Tim Tebow this season will end up on an NFL roster. And I say it's going to be sooner than later. Watch. And for the reasons that I said, I agree with you, Train. He can't throw the football. There's no secret to that. He's trying. He's been working on his mechanics. And it's just, you know, and we shouldn't say it so cavalierly like any of us could go out there and do any better because we wouldn't, you know. There's only, you know, 32 starting quarterback jobs in the world. And for a brief time, he held one. So let's give the guy a little bit of credit. But right now, he can't get that, nor can he even get backup quarterback. But we're talking, what, you know, now we're talking 64. 96 of these in the world. So, you know, it's a very small group. And he just has not demonstrated the skills consistently to hold that position consistently. But does that mean he's not going to be on a team and be there, you know, in a pinch if someone gets hurt and can fill in? Did he not show in Denver that he could do that? That he could come in and get some wins and do just enough? Is he the long-term answer? No. Will he ever be? I don't have a crystal ball, but based on what we've seen, I doubt it. But could he come in and I'd take him in Dallas. I'd take him. You know, I couldn't even tell you who our backup quarterback is, to be honest with you. Couldn't even tell you in Dallas.
Coward.
Oh, is it still Orton? Okay. Yeah, so many. I don't know who the third string is because they don't have about six.
I'm mad you don't know that it's Kyle Orton, man.
Because he don't mean
still nothing. Working. But,
yeah, well, whatever. I saw like three or four third string quarterbacks come through this season, and I'm like, I don't know none of these guys, and they all got cut. I take them in Dallas, you know, but watch what I said. The guy's going to get another chance. It may be his last, but somebody, while he still has market value, he's going to get another chance. That's all I'm saying. Let's switch from the East Coast to the West Coast. This wasn't big news, but I had to bring this up. I don't know how you guys felt about this, so I'm just going to rant for a minute, and you guys can jump in all you want. Terrell Pryor, I always want to say Aaron Pryor, the boxer. Aaron Pryor. I always want to say Pryor. First Pryor I think of is Richard Pryor. And then I think of Aaron Pryor, the old boxer, you know. But Terrell Pryor is the starting quarterback in Oakland, and rightfully so. But the news is not so much that he's the starting quarterback. To me, the news is Matt Flynn once again gets shafted. And I don't mean that he got shafted from my opinion. I mean, that's what the press is saying. Because he was brought in to be the starter, just like he was brought into Seattle to be the starter. And can I just remind everybody that the guy played one game? He played one game. It was the last game of the regular season with Green Bay. And, yeah, he threw six touchdowns in a game that meant absolutely nothing. And his whole career of trying to be a starter is off of a game that he threw six touchdowns that meant absolutely nothing. That's why he was playing. That's why Aaron Rodgers was sitting on the bench, because the game meant nothing. They had already locked up everything. And this is the and so he keeps getting signed to be a starter somewhere where he hasn't done anything. It's one game. We've seen even Tim Tebow, as we talk about, was able to do it, well, actually for more than one game. And he's not even a backup. Couldn't even be third string. But for some reason, because Flynn had one great game, we keep seeing this guy get opportunities to be starters. And then when they realize he can't, I hear he got stiffed again. He got shafted again. No, he didn't. He only played out three seasons ago. I'm sorry. I don't see it in this guy. It was one game. That's it. And, yeah, Seattle brought him in and signed him to a big contract, and there was a reason. Now, we all disagreed. We were all on the same page at the beginning of last season with Wilson, and they gave Wilson a job, and we said, and Wilson kind of struggled the first couple of games, and we said, what y'all doing? We all said it. And we turned out all to be wrong. They knew something. So that should be the message right there, that if Flynn is – and maybe he's the guy to go in and be a – and maybe he should go into New York or something, because they can't figure it out anyways. So let's just throw him in the mix over there. I don't know, with the Jets. But let's stop saying the guy got screwed and the guy got shafted, because he hasn't done anything, in my opinion. That one game is not enough for me to say that this guy should be a starting quarterback in the NFL. You guys have any thoughts on that, or am I just out on the island?
Hold on. I mean, he deserved. Like, I mean, okay, deserved is probably not the right word, but the thing about it is that when you don't get an opportunity to start, and when I say opportunity, I don't mean competition to start. Which, by the way, he did play well this preseason, including 70% of his passes. Really a chance to prove that one game wasn't a fluke. It's a little rough for him. I don't think he got screwed, because at the end of the day, he wasn't guaranteed anything other than a competition for the number one job, in which he lost both times. I mean, when he went to Seattle, maybe they told him one thing. However, competition and camp and the draft played out, to another tune. But I understand the football reasoning in Oakland. That offensive line is terrible. It's really bad. I mean, so even if he was there, he'd be like a sitting duck. At least Terrell Pryor can move around, make some things happen, make some plays out of nothing. But, again, I mean – we really don't know what Matt Flynn is. We can't really sit here and say that he's bad, he's good, he's average. We don't know. We just know that he's lost 2 years in a row his the job at when he had it all but locked up, which is a knock against him. But again, I mean, there's certain guys up there who play better on the football field in the game. I mean, it is kind of what it is. I think we will see if the guy can play at any point, because I don't think that Terrell Pryor is going to last as a starter there, just because that offensive line's brutal. He's going to get hurt. Flynn will probably come in by default, but I mean, we really don't know who Matt Flynn is as a player yet either.
I don't see how we don't know what he is as a player. I understand. Maybe you look at it from the standpoint that we haven't seen Matt Flynn play in any other NFL games except, as T say, one game. But he's had the opportunities to become the undisputed starter of two teams. And they brought him in with the intention of him being the starter. There was no mention of Russell Wilson really being in competition until we actually started seeing Russell Wilson in preseason. And then it was like, oh, now there's a competition. And the same thing when he was with Oakland. So, to me, your opportunity starts in camp. And if you can't be the undisputed starter, then, you know, this is the coaches who will make the decision.
So
he hasn't been able
to
do it in camp. If you can't do it in camp, regardless of what the preseason is like, the coaches evaluate you preseason and in camp. And according to them, the other quarterbacks were better.
Right. But again, that doesn't mean the coaches have always right either.
But
we see what Kurt Warner.
Well, twice now. There's two
twice
years in a row.
Twice though, dog.
Twice that's, we saw Kurt Warner though too.
Okay, let's take another view at it. If Matt Flynn was really going to be the next best thing, then you have to tell me why, because I heard the same question, I think maybe on SportsCenter. Why did Joe Philbin, not take him with him to Miami? This was this guy's offensive coordinator for more than 1 year. This is the guy he threw the 6 touchdowns under. But yet, as soon as he became the head coach, he was not looking to bring in Matt Flynn. And they had no quarterback in play at the time. Tannehill got drafted. So that should tell you something.
I mean, to me, what you have to look at is the fact that this is 2 years in a row, the fact that last year they brought in, you know, they gave the job to Russell Wilson and, you know, damn near went to the Super Bowl, you know. So they knew more than all of us knew that Russell Wilson had it and Flynn got beaten out. And it wasn't like Russell Wilson started the season lighting it up. He got comfortable and, you know, and that defense certainly kicked in. And, you know, they started playing very good football. But the first few games, it wasn't like he was lighting it up, you know. And so, you know, I don't know that he did that much to win the job, but he did enough. And now here we are again with, you know, Terrell Pryor winning the job. I mean, these are not quarterbacks that have, you know, this is not, you know, number one draft picks coming in and winning the job. So I just think that Matt Flynn hype has just been that because of the one game. I think that's what everyone is saying, is this one game. And all I'm saying is, you know, I don't think he should have ever gotten that much credit for that one game. You know, it was one game and it was a great performance, but it was one meaningless game. You know, and handled
though, Russell Wilson,
it didn't mean anything.
Russell Wilson and Spurrow Pryor certainly are much more attractive younger options than Matt Flynn anyway. So that's another thing to think about. But also, they have way more pedigree than even Matt Flynn did even with that one game. And in college, both of them were superstar quarterbacks. I mean, the draft where they were selected didn't necessarily reflect that. Both guys definitely had a lot of success in college as well.
Okay, they had success in college, yes. But they didn't have more pedigree than Matt Flynn coming into those teams. The eyes was all on Matt Flynn being the starter when he went into Seattle. Same thing when he went into Oakland. The other guy, Russell Wilson, Terrell Pryor, they took that job.
Right, and that's a very valid point. Especially Seattle signed him to a big contract.
Yes.
See, Seattle signed him to be the starter. There was no quarterback controversy when they signed him. He was brought in to be the starter. To me, that was the bigger indictment, was they paid him starter money, and he ended up holding the clipboard all year. You know, now Oakland, I don't know that they were as convinced as Seattle was, but it was certainly his job when they signed him. And yet, 2 years in a row, it's not happening. So I just think that, you know, I think we just need to just realize who this guy is. He's this, he's at this point now, a journeyman quarterback who had one good game. And that's it. And will he get a job? I don't know. I'd take, frankly, to be totally honest with you, I'd take Tebow over him in a second. Because I've seen Tebow play consecutive games where he was able to perform. I'm only talking on a backup level, second or third. I'm not talking starter. I don't think either one of these guys can be starters, frankly. But as a stopgap, someone to come in for a short period of time and be productive, yeah, I'd take Tebow over this guy. I just think he's just, you know, you say, why are we talking about Tebow? That's how I feel about Flynn. Like, this is the most covered guy who's done nothing in the NFL that I've ever seen. You know, when the whole story, Terrell Pryor. Wait. I agree with you, K-Star. This guy was a phenom in college. So why are we sitting here, like, completely shocked? Yeah, he had some issues. We know that. But why are we shocked? So, anyway, I just had to get it off my chest. That just pissed me off. Quickly, this is more of a, I don't know. You know, it's been all over the news over the weekend, but I thought it was worth mentioning. The NFL and there's a tentative agreement. There was a lawsuit that involved a group of retired players, roughly 4,500, you know, players that have had all types of concussion, post-concussion syndrome from dementia, Alzheimer's. Some died. Junior Seau's family was part of it. You know, and there was a $765 million settlement that now the court still has to approve it. So it's not done. It's just they have come. The two sides, the NFL and this players group, have come to an understanding. And so now the court has to approve it. And under the settlement, the maximum individual award would be $5 million for someone who has Alzheimer's, $4 million if it was diagnosed after their death and they had a particular brain injury or condition called CTE, and you can look it up online, and $3 million for players with dementia, which Jim McMahon apparently is having. And I was a little surprised Tony Dorsett must be having some issues, because I used to see him, maybe that's why I haven't seen him on TV as much, but he used to be very out there for the Cowboys, talking about Dallas and stuff, and maybe that's why he hasn't been on as much TV over the last couple of years. But I was a little surprised to see that Tony Dorsett, former running back for the Dallas Cowboys. And under the settlement, this would include a roughly 18,000 NFL players, or former NFL players, will be eligible. So the reason that this is news is that people have to understand that for years and years and years, the NFL denied any culpability to these players post career injuries or post career conditions that they had. The NFL you know, they didn't accept responsibility. And now, of course, over the last several years, there have been more reports and more studies that have showed that the repeated concussions and repeated blows have led to these things after these players have retired. And we've seen the NFL do a lot of things on the field and more penalties and, you know, things to try to really mitigate it. So the news here is that, once again, the NFL is stepping up and accepting responsibility. My only comment on it is I'm glad it happened. And the first thing I could think of is, you know, you signed a contract a couple years back there before last season, if I remember correctly, $9 billion. And it's pretty sure that by the next contract negotiations, it'll probably be closer to $12 and $13 billion. NFL is very profitable. They make a ton of money. And you're saying that if someone has Alzheimer's, you know, and you're talking someone who could be in their 40s or 50s, right, and they have Alzheimer's and could live another 20, 30 years, that $5 million is going to be enough. I'm just going to say that I'm happy that the settlement happened, but there's going to be more money coming out of this. there's going to be more money. I will assure you, $765 million is just going to be the top. It's just going to be the icing. It's just going to be like the peak of the mountain. There's going to be more money. And, you know, I'm sorry to say this, NFL fans out there, because this show is for you. There's going to be continued. This settlement tells me that there will be a continued focus on making sure that this game is not as violent as it's been. And that's the thing that us fans have always liked, is the intensity of the game, right? One of my favorite segments ever on TV was ESPN's Jacked Up. Y'all remember that? Jacked Up. You know, Tom Jackson, he just got jacked up, right? You know, and they had to let that go because it was glorifying the violence of the game. And with the concussion issues, we got to discontinue. But we used to love that segment, right? You know, and the NFL used to release the hardest hits DVDs, and I probably still got a few of them, and VHS hardest hits of the year, and all of that. And all that stuff now is they don't release that stuff anymore because they're focusing now with the penalties, and there's a huge focus. So I'm letting y'all know, get ready. It's gonna get far worse. You're gonna see more flags thrown and more penalties, and they're focused on taking the aggressiveness and the quote-unquote violence out of the game is going to continue, because at some point they can't pay these settlements forever, so they got to now stop it at the front end and try to hope that they can do something about the repeated blows that these players are getting. So this is the beginning of something that's going to be in news for many, many years. Get ready, because more is coming. You guys got any thoughts? I talked a lot, I know. It's what I do.
I just have to say, man, I agree with you. And on that last tidbit, it's unfortunately because the violence of the game is definitely one of the main reasons why we watch it, the jacked up, show and everything. But they're definitely changing it to, as they say, to be quote unquote safe. I don't think. Unless you go flag football, I don't think you can make this game safe, because what they're looking as legal hits versus illegal hits, don't hit him in the head, but you can take out his knees and end his career. I really can't even understand it. But I do like the fact that the former players have been taken care of, and hopefully the NFL can put something in place for their current players and future players, to where they won't have this issue.
We will see. We will see. All right. Hard Knocks. I haven't watched the whole thing yet. I was recording them, and I think the last one is tonight. I think I've got one, and I think I have one more to watch. But two comments. First comment is, I think the Bengals' choice was boring. I really wasn't very exciting for me, what I've seen so far. And I was kind of looking forward to it because the Bengals have many former Cowboys on the team. Terrence Newman, Pac-Man Jones, Mike Zimmer was defensive coordinator for many years in Dallas. So I was kind of curious to see, but it's just boring to me. But there was one person that caught my eye. There was one person. Former Pittsburgh Steeler linebacker, James Harrison. And he is now with the Bengals, and I don't know how these teams, not just the Steelers, but it happens, Cowboys have done it, Bears have done it, how do you let guys go to a division rival like that? I don't know, because they're going to have, something for you when you come to play. So I don't know how you do that, but whatever, it is what it is. He's there. And maybe K-Star can shed some light on him since, he was a long-time Steeler. But why is the guy such an asshole? I mean, he completely shuns the Hard Knocks cameras and people to every chance he gets, giving the finger, putting his hand in front of the camera, turning his back when the camera comes around, putting players between him and the camera. And then one of the episodes, one of the reporters says, why is it that you're so adverse to the Hard Knocks cameras? And he paused for a second and then repeated the question back, because that's usually a tactic you use to buy time because you don't know what to say. So he didn't know what to say. And then he responded by saying that they shouldn't be here and that, you know, you didn't work out with us and you haven't paid your dues, your blood, sweat, and tears like everyone in here has, so you don't have any right to be in here and see this. What? Let me just address this real quick, and then I'll let you defend him or not defend him. But let me just say this. You have a job in the NFL because fans buy tickets, fans buy jerseys, fans go to sports bars and pay money, and the sports bar get to all the NFL channels. They pay for that. You know, we sit at home and we watch the games, and then we go buy the beer and the soda and the wings from the advertisers. We do that. We are the ones that generate the income that allows you to have a job, that allows you to be a multi-millionaire doing something that obviously you love and that you're very good at. I'm not going to even begin to say that the guy can't play. But you have the audacity to come on and say that Hard Knocks, which is a show on HBO, for us to see the inside of how a team operates and to get a little up close and personal. So it's a show for us, for me and for you, K-Star, and for you, Train, to watch as fans. And you're going to say that we don't deserve to watch that, that we don't have the right, yet we pay your salary. We are the ones that spend the dollars, that generates the revenue, that keeps you a multimillionaire, and you have the audacity to come on international, not national, HBO's all over the world, baby, international TV, and be an asshole like that? I'll tell you what. I have now lost every bit of respect that I had for James Harrison. All the times that I defended him for being an aggressive player with the Steelers and getting fined unnecessarily, and I was like, hey, man, it's football. I mean, come on now. You know, a guy's just trying to play the game. Why are y'all trying to $75,000 fine? All the times that I was defending him just as an athlete, as an aggressive team leader that's out there trying to lead his team. And that's your attitude? I got nothing good to say about you now. Nothing. K-Star, the floor is yours.
I mean, it's really simple. James Harrison is crazy. You know what I mean? That the guy has issues. And furthermore, this is also a guy who wants to be villainized. That's the role he embraces. That's the role he wants to assume. And that's the role he's played for years now when he was the Steelers, you know, Pro Bowl linebacker. You know, he was the guy who was making the big hits, who didn't care to pull Goodell to kiss off. You know, it always was bad-mouthing him. I mean, so now when you put production in front of him, when you put a TV or you put a camera in his face, he doesn't know what else to be besides that. That's who he's built himself to be. I mean, I'm not saying the guy's a bipolar or schizophrenic or anything, but I think this is just, you know, either this is who he is or this is his alter ego when it comes to the football world because, I mean, it's been pretty consistent. This isn't anything new. He's always been an asshole. I mean, this is the same guy who was on that, I believe, that Rolling Stone magazine, toting guns, talking trash about his own quarterback in Big Ben. I mean, this is the guy who wants to be, again, and I believe he in that article in that magazine was described as the bad boy of the NFL. He wants to be that. So I'm not really surprised by any of it. James Harrison's an asshole, and he's crazy. And, I mean, I love him as a Steelers player. He was awesome on the football team. I mean, if James Harrison was still James Harrison, though, however, as far as a player goes, he would still be a Pittsburgh Steeler, but he's not. You know, he has knee problems. He doesn't get the pass rush he used to. He doesn't have the same burst. But as far as the character, he hasn't changed. So I'm not really surprised by any of it. This is who he's been.
Train, any thoughts on this?
Honestly, no. And this is truly a no. I really do not have any thoughts on James Harrison or not. You want to be a jerk, be a jerk. But do agree with everything you said, G.
As it should be. All right. New feature. Decided that, you know, football is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. There's always something football. Going to scan real quick some of the quick headlines, see if there's anything new, any news that pops up. And quickly, I see the Cowboys actually did sign The guard Waters that used to play for the Patriots, he's a six-time Pro Bowler, which is great news for Dallas because offensive line is a little bit in flux. And if this guy can get back to his Pro Bowl form, then I'm all for it because Cowboys have lost a couple of offensive linemen, some for the one for the year and one, you know, we'll see. So I think it's a good move. I see Cushing's over in Houston, signed a six-year, $55 million extension. No surprise there. Let's see. Yeah, that's really it. That's NFL.com. Jonathan Vilma is on the Saints injured reserve, but designated to return list. That guy just can't get a break. I'll tell you, I almost feel bad for him, except he doesn't play for Dallas, so I can't feel bad for him. But he just seems to I think he's a great player, but the last couple of years, man, the injury bug has really got him. All right, going to quickly run over to ESPN.com, NFL section, just see if there's anything there that's not on NFL.com. Steelers Tomlin Redmond will start at running back. Any surprise there, K-Star? Because the other boy is out, so that's pretty much a given, right?
Yeah, pretty much a given. I'm not sure why there was even speculation as to who the guy was going to be. For me, I knew all along it was going to be Redmond. With Le'Veon Bell out, he's the best running back in this football team, not named Le'Veon Bell. He's going to be the guy. They're not going to go by committee approach. Felix Jones was brought in for depth purposes and not a big Dwyer guy. We already have three big running backs, if you count Bell, along with Dwyer, who's now, you know, recently departed from us. So not surprised at all.
Yeah, you got my old running back, Felix Jones, man. Don't sleep on him. He's got some tread left in that tire, so don't sleep.
I was actually excited by that trade. I think he still has something left as well. I mean, I don't think he's going to be like every down great back, but he could definitely help in certain spots for us, so I'm looking forward to seeing him play.
And he's a really good kick returner if y'all need one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to tell you that he's got – he's got open field speed. I mean, he brought a couple back for Dallas, and once he gets in open field, you know, he uses running back skills to see the hole, and then he's got breakaway speed. You know, he's a 4.4, easy 4.4 runner. So, I mean, he's got the speed. So, yeah, I mean, our depth chart, we couldn't keep him. And first round draft pick. You know, and
we'll take a trash kindly. We'll absolutely take a trash and hopefully make him the trash because we need to put that position with Le'Veon.
It was really for money. I think he would have had a home with Dallas, but you know, if they kept him on the roster, he would have been owed big money, and you know, it wasn't worth it for the production. Now with DeMarco Murray being the man, and we've got Philip Tanner, we got Dunbar, the Cowboys got some backs, and Jones just wasn't enough. It wasn't that much better to keep for that much money. So it really was the right thing for Dallas, but you guys got a diamond in the rough there. I think he may be productive for you. All right. Last thing, actually, we kind of already talked about it. Never mind. I was going to talk about who should start, but since he's hurt, there's another start. Okay, we don't have to talk about that. All right, let's go into our segments now. And for those of you who are listening, 347-838-9525 if you want to call in. You can send us a tweet. Just send it to @TheMaddenVoice. You can go on Facebook while you're there, like the page. And if you want to put a comment, you know, I'm scanning all social media sites for anything newsworthy, so feel free to comment. If you get a chance, go to TheMaddenVoice.com. And, I'm looking for suggestions on what we can put. We have the show up there, and we have a bio of all the hosts. What else can we put on the website? What do you guys think? If you have any thoughts, shoot us a tweet or go on Facebook and just leave a little comment and say, hey, it would be great to see this or great to see that. You know, we manage our own site, so we can do as we please. And we're not affiliated with anybody. We don't have any contracts with anybody. Our loyalties are to you. So if you guys got any thoughts, go ahead and let us know. So we will do our segments, and then we will go into our week one picks. We have six games that we're going to pick, all of them very competitive. But let's go with our individual segments. And we will start. It's been a while since we've done these, so we will start with Dr. Train's philosophy.
Man, well, the title of my segment is simply "Expect the Unexpected," and I really won't be long-winded. And I saw with K-Star's segment, was I was like, okay, this might just roll right into his, or vice versa. And mine is simply this: I've watched all these, you know, analysts and everyone make their predictions, and that's kind of what fans tend to go by, you know, as they listen to ESPN and NFL Network. But what I actually look at, me personally, is just the parity of the league, just the fact that every teams are starting to become teams that have been at the bottom, they're starting to go to the top like the next year, and then the league is starting to be more and more competitive. So I'm telling you, this history will not repeat itself. It's please expect the unexpected, and the teams that you think will not win, they will win some games. There will definitely be over a handful of upsets this season. I can see it happening. Even to my own team, makes you cry a little bit. I mean, if you look at some of the divisions, and mainly just looking at the NFC alone, I really can't truly just, you know, say the guaranteed six or three that's going to make the playoffs. If you're looking at the NFC East, man, that place is a madhouse. I mean, you have no clue who's going to win that division, and besides that, what are the record of other teams are going to be in that division? Look at the NFC North, all four competitive teams. You look at the NFC West and the changes that they made at quarterback, especially for Arizona, that makes them competitive. And Jeff Fisher, mind you, yeah, he didn't like Vince Young, but he's doing a heck of a job down there with the Rams. So you have no clue how that division is going to turn out. Everybody's very high on Seattle. They're very high on San Francisco. But why? Because their quarterbacks perform well. They got good defenses. If San Francisco and Seattle do well, it'll definitely be because their defenses are performing the same way they did the year before. But I'm just saying this to say just expect the unexpected and know that these predictions that you see, they may not be the predictions that come true.
I will say this, Train. I agree with you completely, which is why we'll do game picks, but that's why I just kind of refuse to do the whole who's going to win the division, who's going to the playoffs, who's going to the Super Bowl picks at this point in time, because if you get it right, it's because you were lucky.
Exactly.
you just don't know. Yeah, you just don't know. And
well, we like to do it here at the Madden Voice is formulate our opinions with what we see in the football field. I mean, it's really that simple. That's how we do our predictions. We see teams play. We make our, you know, our bold predictions, you know, at a certain point in the season, not when it's too late, but enough to where we've gathered enough personal, you know, detail and info on which teams we feel like by watching them actually play is a cohesive unit, you know, and how they're going to project for the rest of the season. That's really the only way you can – that's the way we do it here.
And that's the way it should be done, because to do it off of preseason games is ridiculous. To do it off of what you saw a year ago is ridiculous, because we've seen teams, you know, tank the next year. You just don't know, you know. And I 100% agree with Train on this, that, you know, the sexy pick of Seattle, that's the sexy pick now, you know, or, you know, to look at the Seattle-San Francisco rivalry and pick one of those teams going to come out. The Redskins now, that's a sexy pick, you know. The Packers is always, a pick. Sean Payton is back, so now let's take a look at the Saints again, you know, over in the AFC, you know. Are the Ravens going to repeat, and what's the questions going on there? You know, I was just about to say Denver is a huge sexy pick, you know, and I feel a little people falling off the Pittsburgh. I mean, I'm sorry, not Pittsburgh, New England bandwagon a little bit now because of all the stuff they've gone through in the off season. But generally, they're the sexy pick, you know what I mean? But they really ain't got no competition in their division anyway, so they're probably, you know, rolled again. But the point remains is you just don't know.
Exactly. And they're basing this off of most of what I've seen people base their picks off of is last year.
Right.
It's completely off of last year. And just I'm gonna pick on Seattle for a minute. Let's understand that Seattle did catch a bit of steam at the end of the season, but they were not dominating teams to win games. They were pulling it out at the end, which means any of those games could have went either way, and we're not even talking about Seattle if it goes the other way. Recognize the parity and understand it won't be like you predicted. Expect the unexpected.
Train said it well. I appreciate that, Train. All right. And it may roll right into K-Star Sound Off. K-Star wants to talk about being short-sighted. So, K-Star, the floor is yours.
First of all, Train, thank you for that segue right into my own segment. Love segs there. But listen, The cookie cutter analyst that's going on right now of the NFL is, I mean, it's just disgusting. Like, I understand the need for it, the fever of the NFL season, and you know all the predictions. But to me, they're all lazy. They're all, like you said, based off only last season with free agent acquisitions mixed in there, and that's really all the NFL fans really get these days. And you know the NFL fan is taking it as gospel, like, oh yeah, for sure. You know, Seattle, San Francisco. You know, which, by the way, the sexy pick is now the bland pick because we've heard it so many different times by the same networks, by the same group of 10 to 12 people, that everyone's saying the same thing. But what they're not saying is, you know, they're not taking account what happened two years ago. They're only looking at one last season. They're not taking account, like we talked about earlier, where people just lump Philadelphia as the fourth place team in the NFC East, which is ridiculous. They have just as good of a chance as, if not, I think, better than Washington of taking that division, because guess what? Their core record is in better standing and health right now than Robert Griffin III. They have, you know, arguably a better explosive offense with Chip Kelly and LeSean McCoy and DeSean Big Play Jackson out there. And, you know, and the thing is, the sexy picks, again, they're just not so sexy. When you hear players, former NFL players, look at the game today, it's just, again, it's discouraging because you hear stuff like, well, you know, what the Atlanta Falcons did last year with the addition of Steven Jackson, they'll, you know, be right, you know, in the same position to hopefully get to the Super Bowl. But you can't just predict the future based on what happened last season. That's ridiculous. You can't just use that to make your projection. What you're supposed to do is you're supposed to make projections and without just it applying as it pertains to last season and free agency acquisitions. Look at the team like the Steelers, my team, who honestly, are mostly being forecasted as an 8-8 team, basically saying we're going to have the same year as we did last year, which, again, is ridiculous to me. It's personal. Oh, it's hitting home. Because when you look at the Steelers, this is a team that has been very good for quite a long time because they have structure, they have coaching, they have a franchise quarterback. And they simply say, oh, well, this is an 8-8 team. This is a team that, you know, is aging, so on and so forth. But, again, they're not taking into account 2 years ago, you know, 12-4. A year before that, in the Super Bowl, the acquisition of Jarvis Jones, Le'Veon Bell. The fact of the matter is that there were games lost in the last final seconds, and there were health issues. You know, just like with the game with the Saints. I mean, you hear them every once in a while picked as a team to win the division. The people are really just using the mentality of what have you done for me lately, which is short-sighted. You hear guys like Matt Ryan being touted as higher-profile players and more respected quarterbacks than Ben Roethlisberger, when, let's be honest, again, it's home. The guy has one playoff win. Ben Roethlisberger has more Super Bowl wins than he does playoff wins. Ben Roethlisberger, no offense, Matt Ryan, and again, this is a joke, has more accused rates than Matt Ryan has playoff wins, so this is getting ridiculous. Like, I don't understand it. The guy has one playoff win. I like Matt Ryan. Good player. But we're crowning people, you know, only because of what they did this previous season, which is dangerous. You start to lose the history of some of these players and the careers and the actual structure and franchise of the teams and how they played and, you know, how they've been developed and why, for instance, maybe a team last year struggled, like the Bears, who were successful the previous year. And, again, only taking account last year, they're projecting the future off just last year, which I think is dangerous, which I think is extremely short-sighted, naive, and ignorant. And that's why we all have the same cookie-cutter analyst, you know, giving the same feedback and projections, and I just don't think it's any good. I'm tired of it.
And it's boring. It's boring to turn on and hear the same people saying the same stuff. I'll give you an example to back both you guys up. Johnny Football, right? Johnny Manziel, right? He's the hottest discussion in the NFL these days. I don't know why, because he's still in college. But, you know, he gets benched for the first half. He comes back and plays a good second half. They win the game, but he gets benched because he had a on-field episode. And all the analysts go crazy because of it and start talking about how he's not going to make it in the NFL and how that attitude is not going to be successful in the NFL. I'm sorry, one of the greatest wide receivers of all time, Randy Moss, certainly had that type of attitude on the field and was – you know, and I, you know, we can debate on where he stands, but I will say he's one of the greatest of all time. I don't understand. I don't get how you guy hasn't even finished his college career yet, and you're already condemning him in the pros because it's the sexy thing to do. Because people turn on the TV like blind sheep, and they just follow these freaking pundits on these talk shows, and they just believe, and then they bring this garbage to the sports bar, and then us learned fans who actually, like, go to our team's websites and, like, read what's going on with our teams from the people that work for our teams, so we know what's going on. We, like, follow our teams closely. And so we don't necessarily just blindly follow these analysts. So when you get these freaking sheep that come in and say, oh, your team's going to finish last in the division. Why? Well, because Skip Bayless said so. Really? And who the hell is Skip Bayless?
Well, last year they didn't finish quite as well as other teams. I mean, it's not the same thing every year. Like Trane said, it's parity. It's what keeps the league going. It's what drives interest. It's why it's as big as it is. It's not the same thing every year, and there are reasons for it. There are reasons why teams who are particularly good struggle with injuries, stuff like that. And there are certain teams, why, certain situations where teams thrive. And just to kind of piggyback a little bit, we're talking about quarterbacks like Johnny Manziel. They're predicting that his personality is going to be the same today 3 years from now. Like, let the guy mature. He may not be the same person. You don't know that. You're just taking what happened yesterday or today and assuming it's going to be the same thing down the road, which, again, you don't know that. That is merely, in my opinion, lazy vanilla projection. And, you know, even the guys who just arrived, Robert Griffin III, Andrew Luck, Brandon Whedon and Tannehill, you don't know that these guys are going to be as good this year as they were last year. We only have 1 year, one shred of evidence, one, not even an established history, where you're basically saying that, okay, this guy is this. This guy's going to have a better year, if not, you know, it's equal to his rookie year. You don't know that. There's regression.
Well, it is Cam Newton who came out rookie year and set some records. And what did he do last year? Not much.
Yeah, he didn't do anything. He had a nice little successful year, but he didn't even play as well as he did his rookie year.
You know, and just to add more fuel to this fire, you know, Stephen A. Smith, who is a routine Cowboy hater, has spent the entire offseason talking about the Cowboys are an accident waiting to happen. That's his favorite line. And now today I hear him predict that they could go to the NFC Championship game. Would you make up your mind? I mean, when you change your position with the weather, then of course you're going to be right. You know? And then he says, but whatever the expectations are, they will fall short. Well, of course they will if you change them. You know, the season is about to start, and you've changed your position on the Cowboys 18 times during the offseason. How do you have credibility as an analyst when you keep changing your position, and your position is not based off of facts or what you see? It's based on a personal dislike for the team. And then you wonder why Jerry Jones won't sit down and let you interview him. I wouldn't either. You know, and then you bring DeMarco Murray on the show, and you want to talk about last season. DeMarco Murray's like, that last season's over. We're looking ahead now. I'm looking forward. Yeah, but what
did
about
the same thing with Emmanuel Sanders, the first take team, did the same thing.
Yeah,
when he
it's over.
Come on, last
it's
season.
Done. The season's done. I'm looking at next year now. You know, let's talk about what our expectations are, not where we didn't produce last year. That's done. You're not my coach. I've already had to explain that to my coach, my general manager, my VP of personnel, and my owner. Now I got to sit here on TV and explain it to you who ain't paying me. No, that's okay. Let's move forward. I agree, and that's why y'all got to listen to the Madden Voice, because we're going to come at it from a different angle. We're going to give you something to think about. We're not going to waste your time and your intelligence by telling you who's going to be the MVP in the NFL now or who's going to win the Super Bowl now. Because you know what? We just don't know. Did anybody think Adrian Peterson was going to come back last year and have the season he had after those knee surgeries? Absolutely not.
No. Not one person gave you that. You know, now analysts about Adrian Peterson, he's going to come back and tear down. No one said that.
Nope.
Not any football pundit, not football expert, it wasn't even talked about because they thought it was ridiculous to even assume that. But, again, you have to actually watch it play out the field. Maybe after week one, you can actually develop a better projection of what their season's going to look like, which is still relatively early. But at least in week one, when you saw Adrian Peterson play, you could see, oh, okay, well, Adrian's fine, clearly. We had two touchdowns and 90 yards rushing off, like, 14 carries. Like,
I think four games, to me, the first quarter of the season, and you can start to see that. Yeah, I think you can start to see that. It's a short season.
Just to add to the ridiculousness.
Games,
you know,
and after four games, I think you can get a sense of where teams are headed. Go ahead, Trane.
Exactly. Now, I was going to say, just to add to the ridiculousness, you know they've released some power rankings, right, for week one before any games are played. And ESPN has Seattle at number one, and NFL has San Francisco at number one. I can almost buy San Francisco more than I can freaking buy Seattle just sitting at number one because they made it to the playoffs and won one game.
I mean, San Fran at least did it 2 years in a row. I'm tired of just the 1 year, you know, success of a team and then just projecting that to be the case every year. I mean, it's hard to win consistently as a franchise in the NFL, so I agree.
That's very hard.
It's ridiculous. Almost said now.
Well, now we will go to my segment, and it's affectionately known as T-Bonics. And I'm actually going to go into a little bit of a different direction. I think we've beaten this topic up enough. But I'm going in a little bit of a different direction. My title is very simply That Feeling. That's my title. Last NFL season, I went through some personal stuff in my female life that was very hard for me last year. And it impacted how I enjoyed or didn't enjoy the NFL season. And as we come into this year, I reflect on last season. And I remember somebody asking me about my female situation now, asking me, and not necessarily wanting to turn this into a discussion about my personal life, which I will not do. I will say that every time, you know, in your life, you may have the lucky, the good fortune of meeting someone that makes you feel a certain way. And when you feel that and you lose it, you want that back, right? And that's what I was explaining to somebody. And as I was explaining that feeling of you know, having you meet a particular person and you get together with them and you have some type of bond with them in a relationship, and then for whatever reason you go your own way, and then that you miss that and you want that feeling back. And you hunt around to see if either that person can come back or someone else can give you that feeling, right? And I was thinking about that. And then I started realizing what I missed about football last year that I will not miss this year, but it was that feeling. And I have it now, and I really didn't have it last year because I was going through other things, so I didn't have my complete focus. But I'm not going through those things this year. And I have that feeling. And I say that to all of you to say, where else, what else in life gives you the feeling that the NFL season gives you? I'm not saying there aren't other things in life that will make you happy. You know, a good meal will make you happy. A good partner will make you happy. Making good money will make you happy. And everybody has little things that they like to do that make them happy, whether it's, you know, playing Madden or whether it's, you know, I don't know, whatever your hobbies may be, there's things, you know, I like to ride a motorcycle, you know, and there's certain things that give you that feeling. But what else makes you feel like the NFL football season? There really isn't anything. And I always say this every year. You're going to blink and we're going to be in November at Thanksgiving, and we're going to blink and we're going to be in the playoffs. It moves that quickly. We sat here and did a show, did our Super Bowl show, then we did a couple of draft show, and we did a couple of shows in off season. We kept talking about football season is coming, football season, you know, but let's enjoy our summer, but football season. Well, ladies and gentlemen, in 48 hours, it begins. In 48 hours, the 2013 football season begins. And that excitement that we are all 0-0, and that love that you have for your team, and that hope, is this going to be the year? Are my Cowboys going to get out of their own way? Are the Bears going to step up without Lovie Smith? Are the Steelers going to rebound from a disappointing year behind their two-time Super Bowl quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger? And that anxiety, that pit that you get in your stomach, that, you know, and the excitement when your team does well, and then the depression when your team does poor. And the fact that we walk around and we say, my team. We talk about the Cowboys or the Steelers or the Bears, and we say us and what we need to do because we claim ownership of that team. It's not a separate team. We embody that team into our hearts and our soul. They are a piece of us. We live and die for our teams. We breathe for our teams. We suffer with our teams. And we celebrate with our teams. And that feeling that you get, there really is nowhere else to get that feeling. Just like that love, and I'll say it as a man, from a special woman, or if you're a lady out there, the love from a special man, you can't find that nowhere else. You can't find this feeling anywhere else. So embrace it, ladies and gentlemen. Grab hold of it and enjoy it. And don't do like Commissioner T did last year. Don't let anything else get in the way. Silo it. Put it to the side. Because before you know it, it's over. The shortest pro sports season of them all, the least number of games, and the shortest duration on the calendar. So when you blink, it's over. And because the season is so short, this ain't like football. I mean, baseball, 162 games. This ain't like basketball, 82 games. Football, you lose 3-4 games in a row, your season's over. So you could be sitting here in October with your team being 1-5, realizing the season's over and having to suffer through the rest of the season. But right now, you're 0-0. Right now, the hopes and the dreams are alive. And as these two co-hosts of mine so eloquently stated, anybody can do it. Any team can put together some wins and be a contender going into the fall, late fall, and going into the winter. But who will it be? Will it be your team? Will it be the team you hate the most? We don't know. But that uncertainty leads to that desire and that fire and that hunger to enjoy NFL football. Because it's back, baby. It's back. Now let's get into our week one picks. First game. And Train is offered to tally up again, and let's keep track. And each week we will pick the most competitive games. First week is always the toughest because I do have to go off of kind of last year and what we know about these teams. But any of these games, I mean, I almost thought we could just do all 16 games, but we've never done that, so no reason to start now. So I picked the 6 games that I thought would be the most competitive, really based off of history. And, of course, it starts with Thursday night's game. The defending Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens go into Mile High Stadium to take on the Denver Broncos. That should be a heck of a game. No Ray Lewis, no Ed Reed. And Peyton Manning, a year healthier, I say. And Wes Welker added to his arsenal. The Ravens go into this game, I heard earlier today. Now, the line could have changed. 8.5-point underdogs. Talk about disrespect for your defending Super Bowl champions. That's huge, guys. Anybody out there, 8.5 points. I mean, in football, you know, you score 7 points. But to be an 8.5-point underdog, that's huge. That said, let's make some picks. Let's start with K-Star, since this is AFC and he loves the Ravens. So, K-Star?
Definitely like the Broncos. I mean, listen, Peyton's pissed. And let's be clear here. The Ravens definitely lucked out in Denver. Last year when they won the playoff game, they had quite a bit of heroics. Ronnie Moore missing that ball, which I'm sure that highlight he still refuses to watch. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is when you have a pissed-off Peyton Manning, when you have a Wes Welker thrown into that offensive fray, which already was the second highest-scoring offense on all football last year, when you take into consideration that Peyton Manning is now a year removed from the surgery, a year when he's already worked with the receivers, and Peyton Manning reportedly saying that he feels like he has stronger zip on the ball. He's regenerating some of his arm strength. That's huge. And again, regular season Peyton Manning, quite a bit better than playoff Peyton Manning. I think that when you add in the new parts with the Baltimore Ravens, they're going to have to establish some team chemistry. It's not going to be there right away. If the Ravens are good this year, which I still think they will be as much as I dislike them, I don't think it would be good at the beginning of the season. They have a lot of new faces, have a lot of new leadership, and they're going to have to develop some chemistry, which the Broncos and Peyton Manning have already established. With that said, I like the Broncos to win this game.
Train?
Wow. This is a tough one. I don't think it's as simple because all I've heard K-Star mention is Peyton Manning. I never he didn't mention anything about the other side of Denver Broncos ball and that they're missing. They're going to be missing their best defender, their game-changing defender. They will be missing for, the first 6 weeks of the season. I think that's huge. Yeah. Ravens have lost some pieces, but they also have gained a few pieces. And it would be, to me, the easy pick is to go with Denver. But for some reason, for some odd reason, I like Baltimore for this game. And it's unfortunate that they are not playing at home. I would be more at ease if Baltimore was at home, but I'm going to go with the Ravens anyway.
Okay. I think Train makes a valid point, but I think Denver at home is going to be very tough to beat, even for Baltimore. Baltimore offensively, receiver-wise is going to have some challenges. Bolden is gone, and so we will see. What Flacco was able to do. I know they have Ray Rice, and he's, franchise quarterback. Running back. But it's going to be – and even though Denver has lost – is it Von Miller, I think? Is that who it is that's out?
Yeah.
Yeah. They still have a pretty solid defense. And Peyton's going to be Peyton, and with Welker added to that offense, I think it's just – I got to give the edge to Denver at home on this one. Peyton is not impressed with Baltimore being Super Bowl champs, I'm sure. So I got to go with Denver on this one. Cincinnati at Chicago. So we will give, we've watched the Bengals on Hard Knocks. Many of us have. I'm still watching, but Bengals are certainly being touted as one of the better teams in AFC. Some are picking them to win their division, too much to K-Star's dismay, but some are picking them to win their division. They've come out and said it's Super Bowl or bust this year. They feel that they're good enough to get there. So, last year there were certainly no scrubs. So we're going to listen to Train explain to us why his Bears at home are going to take out those Bengals.
I'm going to keep it for you real simple. The Bengals are definitely a good team. They're a very good team, in my opinion. If I wasn't a Bears fan, I'd probably pick them. But because I am a Bears fan, and because I do know our defense creates opportunities, I think our offense will be able to capitalize on those opportunities. But we got to be mindful. They got A.J. Green, and they do have Dawson throwing in the ball. And Bengals do have a really good defense. So this will be a close game, but as a Bears fan, I have to roll with my Bears.
Okay. K-Star?
Well, first of all, as a Bengals hater, as a detractor of all things Cincinnati, let me tell you, Train, you should feel pretty good about this Sunday, and here's why. Just because I hate the Bengals doesn't mean I don't pay attention to them. Oh, no, I know the Bengals at the back of my hand. Slightly hairy, pretty good looking. But let me tell you something, there's a place there. Not actually in my hand, by the way, but the Bengals. Listen, when Andy Dalton plays a defense that, it has good cornerbacks and good pass rush, which, again, any quarterback playing good pass rush and good secondary, that have issues. But when Andy Dalton himself goes on the road, and plays a team that's a good defensive unit, he has issues. He has problems beating man coverage on the outside. He can certainly put up points against middle-of-the-pack average NFL defenses, below average, but he absolutely struggles. That offense passing game really has problems moving the ball against teams with stout defenses. And with Chicago being at home, with Julius Peppers coming off that edge, with Charles Peanut Tillman, Tim Jennings, and Lance Briggs still floating around out there, I think that they're going to have some issues. I think it's going to be relatively low-scoring game. As, again, the Bears also have some chemistry issues we have to work out and with that new offense implemented and installed. But I think it's going to be enough with them being at home and relying on, either Devin Hester play or a turnover or two from their defense to generate enough points for them to eat this one out. I like the Bears.
So K-Star is an anti-Bengal, so he's picking the Bears. Train is a Bears fan, but he's picking the Bears. But what Train has kind of convinced me of is that really Cincinnati is the better team right now, simply because all I heard out of all of this was, if I wasn't a Bears fan, I would probably pick the Bengals. And that's enough for me to say I got to go with Cincinnati, because I respect Dr. Train's assessment of his own team, and I respect his loyalty to his team. But at no point am I hearing him say, we have the better team and should win this game. He's actually saying...
Hey, the Bears will win this game. I personally can tell you they're going to win this game.
Your credibility is nil because you're speaking as a Bengal hater. So
and that's fine, the proof is in putting by Andy Dalton against those type of defenses. I'm just telling you.
Well, again, your opening comments were, I do not like the Bengals and I know them very well and I do not like them at all. That was your opening comment, and then you went in on as why Chicago won the game. So both of you have convinced me that Cincinnati's going to win this game. So I'm going with Cincinnati. I was waiting for reasons, but you're biased because they're in your division and you won't pick them. And Train just feels like I have to support my team, which I agree with. I absolutely agree with. I can't knock Train for supporting his team, but that's why he's picking them. Not that the team can't win. Not that, and let me just not say that I'm speaking bad about the Bears. We know that the Bears, you know, always have the potential. The defense can score points and always can, and on any given day. My question is, I don't even think Train knows which Chicago Bear team is going to show up against these Bengals because we've seen both last year. So which team is going to show up? And I think Train is sitting there saying, I don't know which team I'm going to get, so I'm going to pick them. But Cincinnati is a pretty doggone good team. So that's it. I'm going with Cincinnati. Atlanta at New Orleans. And we saw New Orleans play competitively against Atlanta without Sean Payton. Sean Payton is back. They have hired our old defensive coordinator, Rob Ryan. What's his name from the guy that used to be Spagnuolo there, is gone, which is a shame because I think he's a great defensive mind, but just didn't get it done last year. Not completely his fault, but didn't get it done. I'll tell you, I have always been a quiet Saints fan. Quiet because I only think you should have one team. I'm not with these guys that say I have three teams. But, you know, Sean Payton came through Dallas. And I've always liked Sean Payton, and I always respected his relationship with Drew Brees. And while Drew Brees played very well last year, you could just see what Sean Payton means to that entire team. And when Drew Brees got in trouble, we saw him do things that he normally doesn't do, you know, three interceptions and that kind of stuff. We usually don't see that from Drew Brees in crunch time. And I think it's because he looks to the sideline for his coach, his mentor, his leader, and he wasn't there. And this year, he's going to be there. This year, he's going to be there. Atlanta's got a good team. But I think that there's going to be a determination in New Orleans to really put themselves back on the map. I really think so. And I think this is going to be the game that they make a statement. So I'm going to go with the Saints on this one. Train, your thoughts?
This is definitely another one that's kind of tough to pick. But I'm not a fan of Rob Ryan's defense. I'm not yet. I haven't seen enough, especially taking the unit that was dead last. And it's going to be a battle of the offenses. And true enough, very true, Sean Payton is back, and that definitely makes the Saints' offense damn near 10 times better than what it was last year because that guy knows how to dissect a defense from the sideline. But the Falcons need to make a statement. And I think this is where they make their statement, first game of the season, that this is their division. I like the Atlanta Falcons. I've liked them for a while. As you say, T, a very quiet fan of the Atlanta Falcons. So I'm going to take the Falcons on this one.
Okay. K-Star, break the tie. K-Star.
Uh-oh.
Oh, wait a minute. Somebody mm-hmm. got muted. I got muted. K-Star.
Yeah, I know. You lost me. I'm back. We're here.
All right.
Listen, I agree with you. I agree with you, T. Absolutely agree. The reinvigorated Saints, the rejuvenation that they're going to – the wave of motion, not only are they playing at home, but with Sean Payton back, I mean, the surge of just pure motion, of energy that's going to come from that crowd, from that team. It's going to be tough for Atlanta to weather that storm in New Orleans. That offense was good last year. I mean, very good last year at New Orleans Saints. It'll be much better this year. Sean Payton makes a big difference. And I think that even though he's known as an offensive guy, even his presence alone, as far as game planning and managing the clock, it helps that defense out because it puts the Saints in situations where maybe they're able to kill the clock to help their defense out at the end of those games and close those games out. And again, I mean, it's just going to be so tough for Atlanta to come in there and win that opening game. As good as Atlanta is, when you look at New Orleans and what they can do offensively, I mean, when you add in that crazy emotion and that swirl of, fans who's going to be going insane, it's going to be crazy. And I like New Orleans to win this game. Darren Sproles, Marcus Colston, and Jimmy Graham, those are guys that are tough to match up with, and they're going to exploit the Atlanta Falcons.
All right. Next, Green Bay at San Francisco. Let's start with Train on this one. Let's start with Dr. Train on this one. Green Bay is certainly a team that he's very familiar with, and we've talked about these 49ers a little bit, and interesting that I'm getting a feel from the show of questioning the 49ers and the Seahawks this year, coming off of their year with Kaepernick and Wilson, and can these, although both teams strong defenses, and can these teams, I mean, one website has San Francisco, one website has Seattle, all this hype. So we're questioning, is the hype deserved in San Francisco? And then where are we with Green Bay? They tend to always be there under Aaron Rodgers, and they've had some major defensive issues last year. So, have they fixed those problems? Train, Green Bay, the NFC. What are your thoughts? Green Bay at San Francisco, that's a late game, 4:25 game on Sunday.
I'm going to make my choice, and it's not going to be based off any hype or anything of that nature. And I'm going to go with the 49ers at home, simply because the way they play ball against Green Bay works. I saw it last year, even before Kaepernick stepped on the stage. Harbaugh knew how to get his offense running against that defense and against Green Bay's defense. Of course, Green Bay's defense, it's ranked last as far as yards, but as far as points allowed, it was in the upper half of the league. So let's not sleep on Green Bay defense. But I like, as far as team versus team, and you could take both sides of the ball, I think the 49ers have the edge, especially with them playing at home. They have a good defense, and they have a defense that can get after Aaron Rodgers. So I like the 49ers here.
Okay. K-Star?
I hear you, Train, but I'm going Green Bay, and here's why. I mean, with all that's going on in San Francisco, they've lost Michael Crabtree. They've lost Deshaun Goldston. You know, they brought in Anquan Boldin, they brought in a rookie, Eric Reed. And this is Colin Kaepernick's 13th game started. When I look at it, I just simply say, what has a lot more likelihood of happening? You know, Aaron Rodgers playing great or, Colin Kaepernick playing great? And for me, it's Aaron Rodgers. I think that's going to be the consistency the Packers need to keep that game, that drive, the offensive points to keep, mounting on the board. Where I do believe that, the Niners will be able to run the ball effectively against Green Bay. They certainly have great game plans. But I do expect to see a Kaepernick turnover to kind of turn the tide and give Green Bay the momentum they need to close this game out. Just, again, simply because there's some new, receivers that are being had in San Francisco, only Anquan Boldin. And Vernon Davis, really for, Kaepernick throw two that we really know about, we feel comfortable about. There's no Moss there. There's no Mario Manningham. There's no Delaney Walker. They're missing some guys. And, again, I think while San Francisco is a really good team, they're going to be a team that gets a lot better as the season progresses, not right out the gate, where I think that, again, Green Bay has that consistency right out the gate because they have Mr. Aaron Rodgers. I like Green Bay.
I don't want to be a hypocrite and, base things off of last season, but I will be fair to say that the San Francisco 49ers did just play in a Super Bowl under Kaepernick. The San Francisco 49ers have showed to have a very aggressive, very physical defense. And while I believe that the defenses will catch up on the read option, spread option, whatever the heck you want to call it, run and gun, wildcat, whatever, I do believe that we will see that less effective this year. I don't believe Green Bay is going to be the team that's going to do that, simply because they did give up a lot of yards. And this is not a team, the San Francisco 49ers, that you want to give up a lot of yards. They will score points. And so I don't know. I know Rob Ryan very well because he coached for Dallas for a couple of years, 2-3 years. So I know very well what he's capable of. And he always just falls a little short. I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's just I think the potential that he has, the scheming that he has, I think is there. But I think it just it gets too complicated. That's what I heard. You know, and one of the things that is happening in Dallas now is things are getting simplified. I think it got too complicated. And now he's taken over a new team, dead rank, last defense, can't go anywhere but up. But I just don't think this is the game that we're going to see it really kick in. I think Kaepernick's going to have none against Aaron Rodgers. The man's the real deal. But Kaepernick showed what he was able to do in his first season as a starter. And I don't expect that that's going to change, you know, in one game. So I and that defense, Lord have mercy. you know, I got to go with the 49ers on this one. And they're home, you know, and they're home. I mean, if this is November and we're playing in Green Bay, maybe I feel differently. But September in San Francisco, yeah, I got to go with the 49ers. Sunday night's game, the New York Football Giants come into Texas Stadium to play my Dallas Cowboys. And as is customary when one of our teams is playing, we let the fan of that team go first. So I will go first. What a lot of people may not know is that in AT&T Stadium, and that's right, the Cowboys finally have a sponsor. It's no longer Cowboys Stadium. AT&T paid a boatload of money now, and so the Cowboys' billion-dollar playpen is AT&T Stadium. But in Cowboys Stadium, the Giants are 4-0. In MetLife Stadium, the Cowboys are 2-1. So both teams have a problem holding home court. I'd like to think that because they now have a new name that we can wipe the slate clean, even though it's the same stadium. It's no longer Cowboys Stadium; it's AT&T Stadium. So I'd like to start this slate clean. I think what I've seen in Dallas is very optimistic. Stephen A. Smith has given the Cowboys a hard time with Tony Romo being more involved. Whatever, that's your opinion. You're entitled to it. I think it's a great thing. The defense is looking much better than I've seen it look under Rob Ryan with the Tampa 2. The ability to get in there and get some turnovers and get some pressure on the quarterback and to stop the run, things that the Cowboys have been having trouble with, to go back to their glory days of a four-man front. And the Cowboys, when they've had their glory times in the 70s, it was doomsday. And in the 90s, it was they kind of called it doomsday too, but always four-man fronts. That's been Dallas Cowboys staple, and they're back there again. I think the defense is relatively healthy. Sean Lee is back. Bruce Carter is back. Anthony Spencer is he's there, but we're not sure if he's going to play or not. But Ware is back. Ratliff is not going to play, but they did bring in another tackle. I just feel very encouraged by what I'm hearing from Cowboy Land. And the Giants, you know, I will say that as a team that's 2 years removed from the Super Bowl, this should be their year to do something. But I don't think it's going to be this game against Dallas. I think Dallas is going to be very hungry. They're still smarting off of 2 years in a row having to win the last game of the year to win the division in the playoffs or go home and losing. Jason Garrett knows he's got to get it done. He's no longer calling the plays. Callahan's calling the plays. So that allows Jason Garrett to manage the game. So we won't see those crazy last-minute penalties that cost Cowboys three games last year. It could have had them in the playoffs. I just think they're the better football team all the way around. Ahmad Bradshaw is no longer with the Giants. We know Eli can have great games, and then he cannot have great games. Human Yura is no longer with the Giants. I just don't think that the Giants right now are as good of a football team as the Cowboys. That's what I'm seeing. And plus the Cowboys are home, and I think they really want to win and beat the Giants once and for all at home. I mean, how many times can the Giants keep winning in that stadium? They're due. The Cowboys are due. So for all those reasons, and frankly, I just think they're the better football team this week, I got to go with my Cowboys. K-Star.
All right. Compelling. Very compelling. Right, all legitimacy. I mean, really good points, T. This is a tough one for me. I mean, obviously, these two teams play just back and forth. Like, it's very always, you know, down to the wire. We saw Dez Bryant have, like, what, an inch away from winning the game in Cowboys Stadium last year, I believe. So it's, you know, they always go back and forth. This is an awesome rivalry. Part of me wants to go with Dallas only because I'm not really sure what the status of Jason Pierre-Paul is. I've heard he's been nicked up. If he's playing, I think the Giants win this game because this guy's a matchup nightmare. The one thing I do want to say about the Giants, although they lost Ahmad Bradshaw, watch out for this guy named David Wilson. Not just because he's on my EAFL fantasy team, no. But because he's a legitimate threat to score whenever he has the ball in his hands. He's a guy who's really good at the backfield, can make you miss in space. He's a very shifty player. I think he's a guy who's going to add a different dimension to them that, you know, maybe Darren Sproles adds to New Orleans, but a more durable back that can see the ball far more often. I guess the one thing to me that separates the Dallas and New York from just week one perspective is just that, again, there's kind of a theme here in which I'm taking these teams, and that's kind of rapport and consistency. Now, when Dallas has a 4-3 look, I think it's going to take them a little bit of time as well to adjust to it, as I think it takes most teams to when they have a new system installed, especially when it's a whole new change of philosophy defensively, offensively, what have you. With that being said, I think the Cowboys are a better team, but I want to go with the Giants because, again, week one, the rapport that they have, and, again, the Kevin Gilbride still the same corner and the same defense installed with that 4-3 in New York. I give the slight edge to the Giants with them.
Wow. Well, let me keep it simple. I'm simply just going to go with Dallas. Not even so much for home field advantage, but simply because Dallas has a good offense. Giants got a good offense. Dallas has adopted the Tampa 2. Mind you, I see that defense 24/7. It's one of the most well-disciplined defenses in the NFL, and it creates problems for impatient teams. Not calling the Giants impatient, but it looked good on Dallas during preseason. And
amen.
I'm not trying to anoint them, but it looked good for the players, for the personnel that they got to be playing that defense. And to me, all these years, that's what's been missing from Dallas to get them over the edge just a little bit. Yeah, Tony Romo, he definitely messed up some games, but the defense also gave up some points. The Tampa 2, it keeps that from happening. So with that said, I'm going to go with Dallas because I just think with that defense, with the way that offense plays, I think they can edge out a slow-starting Giants team, which tend to do it every year.
And just one comment on what K-Star said about switching schemes. You do have a valid point, except the fact that it's kind of like studying calculus, and now we're going to teach you algebra one. What they're both math, but what Rob Ryan was trying to do was so complex and so complicated, and what Monty Kiffin is doing is much simpler and much easier for them to understand. It's got its complexities, but nothing like what Rob Ryan was doing. And I've heard this through interviews from the players, that it has just been such a welcomed change to actually understand the defense because it makes sense to them.
It's all about discipline and being where you're supposed to be. And you make plays. Everyone hustles to the ball. I'm telling you, look out for it. It's just a different Dallas team because of that defense.
I do think that the defense will actually be pretty good at Dallas as the season progresses. I just think that it's important to remember that it doesn't just happen overnight either. Again, that's kind of just my philosophy and kind of my week one picks. I mean, obviously, they may not be 100% correct as they play out, but I do think there's some legitimacy there because even if it's scaled back to a more basic scheme, it's still a whole different change of philosophy from a 4-3 to a 3-4. And it takes a little bit typically, for teams to really play at their highest peak and to their full potential as a cohesive unit in a different scheme. So I do like Dallas this year as a team. I just, again, week one with that, with all the nuances and changes and stuff like that, I think New York kind of has a slight advantage there.
And I will enjoy coming on next Tuesday night and saying, how'd you like our defense? I will enjoy that.
Thanks. We will see.
Last game of the year, I'm sorry, of the year. You just got us in December already. Last game of the week, Monday night. Actually, there's two games. We're only going to pick one of them, the first Monday night game. I toyed on whether to include this one, but since so many people are picking Washington to win the division and we don't really know what Philadelphia team we're going to get, I thought it was a good game to pick, and particularly a lot of intrigue with the new system, the new offensive system being installed in Philadelphia. So there's a lot of intrigue to see Michael Vick on one side of the ball and RG3, you know, even though James Andrews, I wish he just shut his mouth. But anyway, you know, to have RG3 versus Michael Vick and to have a game where the systems, I don't want to say they're similar because I don't think anybody does what Chip Kelly does, but where we're going to see Michael Vick probably in more positions like he was in Atlanta than what we saw. Philly, clearly, Andy Reid wanted him to be a pocket quarterback. And I think we're going to see a little bit less of that. We're going to see them, you know, as we know, Chip Kelly's system, Michael Vick is going to have some opportunities there. And that intrigues us fans. And then, of course, RG3, how's that knee going to be? You know, now you're playing game speed, game contacts, you know, week one, supposedly he's going to start. And so, you know, and I guess I'll pick this game first because it's an NFC East team. I have really struggled with this game. And I honestly just now decided that I'm going with the upset because Washington should be the better team at home and they should win this game. But something tells me that Michael Vick is coming in this game with a chip on his shoulder, and not just the coach, Chip Kelly, but just kind of like student teacher. Like, you know, young man, you were watching me when you were playing high school football. You were watching me do what you're trying to do now. And now you're the heir apparent. You're the 4.25, 4.3 guy, fastest quarterback in the NFL, agile, this, throwing 70% completions and all of that. And I was throwing 67% completions and running over people when I played in Atlanta. And you were watching me trying to be me. Now they're saying you're better than me. I just, something in me says that when an athlete gets pushed to that level and it's not about the money and it's just about pride is when you get the best out of this athlete. And I just have a feeling that Michael Vick is going to come into this game on a mission and he's going to will that team to pull the upset. Something in my heart says that Vick is back. And while we know what RG3 can do when he's 100%, but is he going to be 100%? We know Shanahan is a two-time Super Bowl coach. We know he's coached, you know, Hall of Fame quarterbacks, John Elway, and we know what he can do. We know that Washington defense is really stepping up, and you know, based on what we saw last year, this is my upset. So I just have this feeling. You know, and we do know, especially in NFC East, anybody can win. Anybody can win. Any of these four teams. So with that said, for all those reasons, I'm going with Philly in the upset. Train.
Wow, I was hoping to be last. this is a very tough game to pick, man. The rookie head coach that has a veteran team versus veteran head coach that has a second-year quarterback that's coming back from knee surgery. Wow. I can't really give an edge to, like, either team as far as what one has better than the other. But because of that whole that feeling speech that T gave, that feeling tells me that the Eagles win this game. And I'm going to leave it at that.
I appreciate the respect. K-Star.
Wow. Okay. This is going to surprise you guys, but we're actually going to take the Eagles in a sweep now. All three of us picking the Eagles. For me, it's kind of simple. I mean, we have Robert Griffin III, who hasn't played really in any contact, not in preseason, has been limited in camp. And you throw him on Monday Night Football, as great of an athlete he is, he's going to start out slow. That's going to happen. And I think the Philadelphia Eagles, it reminds me kind of of last year when Washington went into New Orleans. New Orleans really didn't know what to expect from Washington as far as their offensive game plan went. And they came out with the pistol, and they kind of just shredded New Orleans team's defense with that. To me, it's kind of like the same thing with Chipotle's offense. No one really knows what to expect, so the offense definitely has the advantage. And it's so gimmicky that I think it's going to take, at least a half for Washington to adjust to what Philadelphia wants to do. So when you add that, the gimmick element and the blindsided stuff, when you add in RG&E, it's probably taking a while to, get going and get a rhythm in this football game. I like Philadelphia. I just think that they're going to start off quickly. They can also run the ball just as Washington can, but Michael Vick is definitely, I think, a guy to watch out for this year. He's definitely still one of the most elite athletes. And, he's a guy who went through a camp in which he was questioned, which was challenged by his coach, by his team, by Train on here, saying that he felt that competition was legitimate, which insult to Michael Vick. He wants to prove Train wrong. And you know what? That's why I like Philadelphia Train, because you actually thought that Nick Foles was a serious Michael Vick, and he's going to show you why. That was foolish of you to think, because Michael Vick has shown plenty of greatness in this NFL. He's going to do it Monday night.
I just picked the Eagles.
That's where you train.
I'm staying out of that one. And it's interesting that we're all picking the upset on this one. It's actually now I'm rethinking my pick. No, I'm just kidding. it's usually when we all agree is when we're wrong. So Redskins will probably blow them out 30-0, and we'll have to come on here and justify our NFL analyst skills. But I think week one is really I think this is the week to kind of see, do we know these teams or not? Are we going to be Denny Green? They are who we thought they were, or is this going to be the week that we get surprised and teams come out and show us something that we didn't expect? If you look at the schedule, I picked these six games as games that we would call, but some of the other games, New England's going to Buffalo. A lot of questions over in Buffalo and, some questions over in New England. Normally, that's a one-sided game. But are we going to see a Buffalo team that steps up and becomes competitive? I don't know. Seattle's going to Carolina. Which Cam Newton are we going to get? Are we going to get the Cam Newton that comes out and has a better rookie year than even Peyton Manning? Or are we going to get the guy that's indecisive and makes bad decisions under pressure? And how's he going to react to the Seattle defense? Miami and Cleveland is almost the who cares game, because neither one of these teams has done anything. But Miami always seems to be on the verge of making a statement. Is this the year to make a statement? Minnesota and Detroit, division game. Detroit's got Reggie Bush now. Minnesota's got Adrian Peterson, Christian Ponder, Matt Stafford. What do we get out of this game? Do we learn anything, with this game about these teams? Oakland against the Colts. Andrew Luck. Yeah, the guy played a great season last year. What is he going to do this year? Oakland. A lot of people say Al Davis, as long as his family owns them, they're never going to be anything. I don't know. Is that true? Is that not? You know, Kansas City against Jacksonville, a team that we haven't talked enough about, that to me has made to me is the most under talked about and scariest team to me are the Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, maybe, you know, maybe we should give them a week to show us, because if Jacksonville rolls all over them, then that'll kill that noise. But they've made a lot of offseason moves on both sides of the ball and could be very scary. Jacksonville's got Maurice Jones-Drew back. We'll see what they're up against. Tampa and the Jets. You know, we've talked about the Jets, but what's going on with Tampa and Josh Freeman? You know, which Josh Freeman are we going to see? We didn't talk about
Steelers. Hey, bro, Raymond comes back home in New York. That's going to be awkward.
Say that again?
I said Darrell Revis comes back to New York, Jet Stadium. That's going to be awkward.
Oh, yeah. Didn't even think about that. Yeah. And you got Tennessee going to play Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh 8-8. Some people are saying they haven't gotten any better in the offseason. I'm pretty sure that's going to piss off Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger and some of the leaders on Troy Polamalu and some of the leaders on that team. So do they come out and make a statement? I'm pretty sure that K-Star is going to say an absolute yes to that one. Arizona and the Rams, and then you know, then we finish off with Houston, the Texans, who's got a pretty good team going to play Phillip Rivers and the Chargers late Sunday night. So there really is, in every single game, there's a storyline, there's some intrigue, there's something to make us say, you know, are we going to, you know, when we watch this game, if we're watching it or catching the highlights, or I've got the, you know, I recommend everybody get it so you can watch every game and you can actually see a game in about a half an hour, NFL Rewind. And I actually renewed, well, I didn't realize I renewed it. It just charged me and said, you're getting it. So I got it. So I could actually see every single game. But there's so much intrigue in this week one because there's more questions than there are answers. And dare I say, when we're here in 1 week doing this show, how many of these answers will we have? I don't know. I don't know. But it's going to be a heck of a week of football. K-Star, anything? Final thoughts, comments?
Just that this is the closest day to Christmas any of us will ever have. You were talking about earlier how we couldn't really enjoy football season last season to its full potential because of certain personal stuff. For me personally, I'm going to include my girlfriend in these activities because football is very important to me, and she's going to see how important it is, and she is down, and she's game, and I'm excited, and she can see the enthusiasm. I got to stare her in the face right now with such enjoyment and excitement. But in all honesty, I mean, again, this is Christmas for all us football fans out there. This is grown man Christmas. This is what it is. Santa Claus is very real. His name is Roger Goodell, and I'm honestly looking forward to this Sunday and Thursday night with Sir OK Manning. Let's get it.
Sounds good. Train, final thoughts, comments, anything?
Wow. The NFL is about to start, man. I'm ecstatic. I'm just excited about the unexpected, excited about the parody, excited about fantasy football. But one thing I do want to say, or ask real quick, as far as our picks on the show, when we pick them on the show, are we leaving them as we pick them, or are we leaving it open for you to change your picks?
I think we should leave them.
I don't think that's fair, though. I don't think that's fair because it's Tuesday, and a lot can happen between now and Sunday, you know? And, you know, this is the NFL. You know, they have practice. People get injured. People get arrested. They get released. They get, you know, we're making decisions
all right,
5 days ahead of time.
Let's say fair enough this. Let's say fair enough deadline be, because I know you'll probably still do your 1 hour lunch show on Fridays. Let's at least make that the deadline.
Fair enough.
I think we should do our best though to not hedge our bets, to not say one thing, you know, on the show. Maybe
we didn't have it changed last season anyway. But
yes,
I understand that.
No, that's fine. That's cool and all. But I just hope that we keep that to a minimum. Hopefully, like something crazy. Hopefully, nothing crazy happens. But again, I would expect it to be something where someone, you know, is missing the game and the quarterback or something in the last second, which we did not know on Tuesday, something like that. I hope it's
with all fairness, I don't understand why it would be a problem to change your mind. I mean, first of all, we're picking games on Tuesday, and the games are being played 5 days later. okay? So we're just coming off of a week of games, and now we're predicting the next week games with 5 days to go. There's a lot that happens from week to week in the NFL. And I'm making decisions today based on what I know. And some of these games, you know, how many times did you guys say, wow, I don't know. These are pick 'em games. San Francisco and Green Bay, you know, Cincinnati and Chicago, you know, Giants and Dallas. You know, these are the only game that we had unanimous was Philly and Washington, and that's an upset. So I don't think it's fair to say just, you know, it's not hedging your bets. These are closely contested games in the NFL more times than not. And we make decisions on Tuesday based on what we know then. But, you know, you think about it, things marinate, and, yeah, I may come back by Friday. I think Friday is a fair cutoff, but I may come back by Friday and feel differently. Something may happen or not, or I may think it through more and come back and say, you know what? No, I think the Redskins got this one. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, it didn't happen often last year. I did it a couple of times on my Friday show where I came back and made a change and said, you know what? I'm changing my pick. So it doesn't happen often, but I don't think we should be. I think that's sports, you know? Exactly. I think that's sports, you know?
And, you know, I'm just going to guarantee everyone out there that unless it's the rarest of circumstances, I really don't see myself changing my picks much. When I come to the show, I don't know about you guys. I've read the conviction. I've done my research. I've already marinated. I am ready to go. I am baked. It's going down. So I'm just simply telling everyone out there that you don't can catch me saying one thing on the show. Maybe you didn't catch the Friday set us up today. And then all of a sudden, I told you the Niners want to win. I'm not going to pull a team. I'm not going to do that for all of you out there.
Let me just ask you a question. Okay. So on Tuesday, we have a line, right, from Vegas, right, on the spread. Does that spread stick till Sunday, or does it change?
Absolutely not. But those are lines.
Wait. Don't turn it into your point. I'm making the point here. Does the spread stick, or does it change? You said it changes. Well, why does it change? Why doesn't it stay the same then, K-Star? If they say 8.5 for Baltimore, why doesn't it stay the same? You know and I know that any line today by Sunday is going to change. Why does it change? Because more information comes out that impacts whether a team should win or lose that game. And as more information comes out, it affects the spread one way or another.
Okay. Yeah, so, I just think you're going to see an 8.5 favorite then go to say, like, okay, 8.5 favorite Baltimore now, all of a sudden Denver by 1.5%.
You could certainly see up to a 3-point swing. Without a doubt, you can see that.
I just hope that.
I didn't mean to turn to a new topic, but I will end by saying, fans that follow us on the Madden Boys Facebook page, that's where I'll post the pics of myself, K-Star, and T, and I encourage all of y'all to get involved and pick your team after I make the post. Other than that, let's play ball.
I don't have a problem having a conversation. I think that K-Star trying to paint this as hedging your bets is not fair. And I think as analysts, we are exposed to a certain amount of information coming off of the games just being played. This is the only time we won't have that situation. The rest of the season, we're just coming off the game being played. There's going to be injuries. We're going to be waiting on injury reports, MRIs, all types of things going on. So it's not hedging your bets. It's responsible to have all the information. So on Tuesday, when we have it, we will make a decision. And there will be times this season, if K-Star doesn't want to change his pick, that's K-Star's right. But don't make me out to be less thoughtful because by Friday, I do more research and find out, oh, this guy isn't playing or, you know, whatever the case may be. So that impacts, you know, who I think might win the game. I think that's common. It happens in Vegas with the lines, and I think it's going to happen this year, particularly knowing that the teams, for the most part, are so closely matched. You know, we're not talking about the dominant Patriots going 18-0 or 18-1 or whatever, 16-0. And we're not talking about that anymore. We're talking about these teams. This is, you know, you really can't sit here and tell me who's going to win the Super Bowl. You can't tell me. Because in each conference, you could probably pick four teams that could go all the way easily. So, yeah, it is that wide open. And I just want to say, you know, I'm okay with the Friday cutoff because things change. And it's going to change during the week. I promise you that. And the first time that K-Star comes and makes a change, oh, my God, I'm going to burn them.
Hey, listen, all I'm saying is
with
Tuesday, the information we have as far as injuries go, if someone is questionable, stuff like that, it's just something to take into account when making those picks. I'm not saying that it's always going to be the same. I mean, if Ben Roethlisberger or Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees or Romo isn't playing, you know, that's one thing. I just hope that unless something like that comes to light, we don't just automatically change our picks. That's all.
Well, what's the problem if we do? So we do. It's before the game played. It's not like coming on Sunday.
I want you to marinate, T, on Tuesday. I want you to be ready. I want the fans of TFB to know what we want. I want them to know that we're not going to hedge our bets. I don't want them to think anything else. And that's fine if you do that. I'm not upset with you. I'll leave other people to be upset.
And this will be my last comment on your stupidity. What other pro sports pick on makes their picks on Tuesday? Everybody else waits till closer to the end of the week. We happen to broadcast our one show a week on Tuesday, so that's why we're making picks. But you won't find anybody else picking games on Tuesday because it's too early to do it. They do it later in the week, closer to when the games are being played. That's
why.
That's all I'm saying. So, you know, we're picking tonight because we're not coming back on the air. Now, if we were to do two shows a week, one recap show and one preview show, then we would be doing our picks on the second show, on the preview show. But we're doing one show a week, so this is what we got. All right. On that note, I guess that's it. So let me mute these guys. Thank you, Dr. Train. Thank you, K-Star. You know, I let me take a minute and just say this. Dr. Train and K-Star don't get paid to co-host the Madden Voice. They do this out of the love for the game and the love of our fans and their individual fans, and I appreciate it. One day maybe this will be a money-making endeavor for us, but today it's just a hobby, but it's a lot of fun. But I want to personally thank both of them for giving of their time and their commitment to make the show great, and we will continue to work on making this show great. We really want to... right now, our goal is to be number one on blogtalkradio.com. That's our goal. And once we've accomplished that goal, which we will, when we did the Madden Voice for Madden, the video game, we were the number one Madden show on Blog Talk by far. And now as an NFL show, that's our next goal, just to be number one. Once we get to that goal, then we'll tell you what our goal is after that. But we can't do it without all of you. So tell a friend to tell a friend to check out the Madden Voice. If you can't listen live, please check the podcast on iTunes. It's free, or you can go to themaddenvoice.com. But if you can get over to the Facebook page and just like the page for us, it would really help us out a lot. The bigger draw we get there, the better it is for everybody. So for Dr. Train and for K-Star, enjoy NFL Week 1. I hope your team does well, unless you're a Giants fan. That said, thanks everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you next week, Tuesday night. And remember, here on the Madden Voice, ultimately, all of the feuds, they're settled on the field. Good night, everybody.